we're back from the depths, from a very controversial podcast yesterday, Brian Reichel.
Yeah.
Very controversial. A lot of people were upset that I cut Jan off a bunch of times.
Well, you know,
I love Jan, but Jan is the king of the ear beatings, and I was just trying to keep everything moving. In retrospect, having him on the podcast is a good idea because people will be introduced to his work because he's got a lot of interesting research that he's done. But the best way to do Jan's podcast is to do his podcast. You know, to do ours, we try to make it entertaining. With his, I don't have a worry about it being entertaining. I can just be myself and just sit, kick back and relax. But when it's mine, I feel a certain responsibility, and I love Jan, but I'll talk to him on the phone, and he gives me fucking ferocious ear beatings. He called me up the other day for 20 minutes talking to me about Gordon Wasson and how Gordon Wasson is in the CIA and he was in the CFR and, you know, and he is responsible for the whole mushroom movement and how much of it is filled with disinformation and all these elites know about this. And see, he hits me with this, which is, you know, it's kind of interesting information. It's definitely interesting information, but it's the way this information is distributed. The reason why he's such a good researcher is because he's a kind of an obsessed guy. He gets nutty about shit. And it's the right way to be if you're going to be looking up documents all day, because you or I would fucking ADD out of it, and we would just be playing video games an hour later. We would right. totally give up. This fucking guy has not had a TV for years,
yeah.
you know, and he's been living up in the woods. He lives up in a cabin. I mean, he's the real deal. You know, he's a fascinating cat. But for an interview for a guy, I tried to get him to just hang out with us, and he wanted to do a lecture. You know, he wanted to like go over all of his sources and cite all. And I understand that he's done a lot of work, and he's trying to, you know, cite his sources because a lot of that stuff, you know, is very controversial, the subject matter, and people want to know that you've actually done the work and researched, you know, the actual the actual history of what you're talking about, but. God damn, it's hard to listen to it in a podcast when you're just trying to have a conversation with a dude.
Right.
Some people have a hard time with the concept of a conversation on the podcast, but because it's on television on the internet, and because it's on, you know, you can watch it on Ustream, because it's being watched, all of a sudden it becomes like this formal thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like it becomes like something where you're, you know, because so many people are there looking at it, you want it somehow or another to be staid and professional and respectable.
Right.
Yeah, I think he doesn't leave that world that much. I almost feel like that he's in it 100% to the fact that he over obsesses about it, and the only entertainment he has is maybe planking. Or something like
planking.
That.
What planking. Is planking exactly? Because I keep hearing about this.
Planking
it's like
is
an internet meme.
Yeah, it's this weird thing that where you just lay and straight, stiff as a board in places.
Okay.
Like you go outside in the middle on sunset and you just lay down on your back, stiff as a board, and it almost looks
and
like
everybody
broken
knows
people.
What you're doing.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are like, "What the fuck's going on
but
over there?"
People have died doing this, right?
What?
Yeah, people yeah. have like tried to do really
crazy
dangerous planks.
What?
Yeah,
they try to plank off of like 9-story balconies.
Shut the fuck
yeah,
up!
Yeah,
plummet to their death.
Oh my god!
I've seen people plank where they climb up one of those light poles in a parking lot and lay on top of one of those and plank for a couple hours.
What?
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ, what a dumb way to die. That
dumb
is.
Way to die.
I planked at that hotel
dumb
the other
last
day.
Last moment.
Oh!
That is you're planking down into Hades and just thinking about what an idiot you are, that your last few moments as you go plunging to the sidewalk. Oh. So dumb.
For an internet joke.
Yeah, it's just I guess it's a form of performance art or
yeah,
something?
It's something like that. Or it's just to me what it looks like is broken people. Like if you look at a video game and there's like a glitch and there's like a person laying sideways,
right.
that's what I right. consider it as. That's why I love it, cuz I'm just like, "Hey, it's broken people." You know, it's like our system
it's like a buggy system. It's like when remember you used to get those beta releases of video games
yeah.
and there'd be
yeah.
like clipping problems where you could walk through walls and yep. shit. That's what it is.
Yeah,
huh?
Absolutely.
I did not know about this. There's so many goddamn people and there's so much information out there that it's impossible to know about every fucking freaky weird thing people are doing. It's literally, you think you've got a good catalog of people's sure. behavior until you run into furries, or you run into planking, or you hear about some new thing.
It's so great when you find a new thing too. I remember when I found out about furries, that was like the best 2 weeks.
You should have been here when I came back from Pittsburgh, man. There was a convention of them in Pittsburgh. I got a lot of information.
Did you? So you went to the convention?
I saw them. I didn't go to the convention. It was coincidental that there was a UFC in town the very same weekend as this big furry convention.
I think it was planned. I think a lot of those UFC fighters are into it.
No, the UFC fucked up. They had to get people's hotels way outside of the city. It was a real pain in the ass for the fighters.
Because
of the furries. I'm not bullshitting.
So the idea with furries is you're just taking on an alternate identity as a stuffed animal or like
yes,
a Disney.
It's a mascot, yeah. And you don't talk. You use grunts. We talked about it in depth when I got back because I was so amazed that this was a real thing that I didn't know about. Because I thought, I'd heard the term furries, man, and it was like some distant thing, like, oh, furries, oh, yeah, they're into wearing rubber or something like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like one of those things where what is that called when people are into wearing rubber? They wear like rubber
latex,
suits and shit.
Like latex.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that are like really into like really tight latex rubber shit. Right. So I thought it was kind of like that, just some weird freaky thing that just a small group of people are into. But I did not know they had their own fucking language, and they have like meetings that they meet at several times. Yeah, they shit in litter boxes and they eat food out of bowls like animals. Like they go deep, man. They don't wash. They chase each other around like animals. That was the weirdest thing when we were driving. We were watching these two people chase each other around like the guy was sniffing the other guy's butt. Running around trees. I mean, they're acting literally like animals. It's so fucking strange.
I want to see planking furries. That's what I think they should do.
Sure, they do it. I bet if you take off the masks of furries, you're going to find a
planker.
A really surprisingly normal group of people.
You think?
Yeah. I think people, there's a lot of people out there. I think it's that Thoreau quote that many men live lives of quiet desperation.
Yeah.
Is that Thoreau who said that?
I think so.
I think there's a lot of people out there that are so disenchanted and disenfranchised with whatever boring existence they might have stumbled into and are now stuck.
Yeah.
There's a lot of us that live like that.
You get stuck.
And they're fucking bored, man, and they want something else. And even if it's dressing up like a fucking mascot, like a giant fox and running around grunting with people, fuck it, man. It's like at least you can be free of the programming for a little bit.
Sure.
Free. I mean, if you're a guy who works in an office, all right, for 8 hours a day, man, this podcast is a way more accurate representation of how most men sit around and bullshit and talk than the kind of conversations you're allowed to have in the office, right? When you're allowed to have something in the office, you have to be respectful, you have to be businesslike, you have to be, and I totally appreciate all that. And if your wife is working in some office, you don't want cock jokes flying left and right and, everybody being uncomfortable. This one guy's always telling dirty jokes. And, I totally get the idea of the working environment where people are, but the idea that you have to not be you for 8 hours a day, I think is terrible for you.
Yeah.
To like put yourself in a little box, like 8 hours, hello, Mr. Johnson. Good to see you, sir. And one part is just being nice. But when you want to say something fucked up, when a fucked up thought crosses your head and you got to squash that thought, you got to put it away. Yeah. Like, oh, this person's not going to be able to handle this joke or this subject is off limits.
Right.
That's not good for
Well,
you,
no,
man.
It's terrible for you. It's a game. It's like the office is a game, and there's very specific rules where when the game starts in the beginning of the day, there's a boss, and suddenly this person who's just like you has authority over you and can basically controls your life and the food for your kids, and so you have to speak in a certain language dictated by the corporation. It's this terrible fucking game that people forget is a game, and they begin to think, oh no, this is the way you're supposed to act, this is real life. And that's when you get like that B of A song. Did you ever see that
B of A song,
the Bank of America song? Did you ever see that? It's like somebody filmed this corporate announcement of a merger between B of A and another bank, and it's a guy saying to U2's One this song that he wrote about Bank of America, and it is
what
it will make your eyeballs roll back into your head with such existential horror.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
it's seeing this brainwashed drone who's obviously spent like a week writing the lyrics to this song and is passionately
oh my god
passionately singing the lyrics to how great Bank of America is as a corporation.
I think we should be able to play this on the podcast.
Oh, you absolutely can.
I believe it was a corporate video that was made by Bank of America, right? That was sent out to its employees.
Somebody had a camera out during this like moment where some kiss ass who knew how to play guitar
wrote a song about Bank of America.
And everybody in the audience is clearly like, they seem uncomfortable to me. They're just like, oh, fuck. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of a cult. It's like a cult. The feeling there is that of a people who've gotten absorbed into a cult. That's the only way to put it. It's like they believe crazy shit that is only even known by a relatively small group of people, and it's their entire lives. Banking. The Bank of America way. The way that we do business. He's singing about the way they do business, and it's kind of obscure banking terms in the song.
Really?
It's really terrible.
Yes, I want to hear it. It sounds fucking awesome.
This could be found on YouTube under Bank of America Sings U2's One.
I just want to say before you press play, I'm looking forward to this almost as much as I'm looking forward to the new Conan. Go ahead, play.
some guests who have been so impressed with your results to date, and they've listened to the plans being described today and continue to be excited about what's going to be the card business today and beyond. And that is Jim Dubois, who is the consumer market exec for the Manhattan market.
What's up? Why are we listening to all this nonsense?
Who is one of our Manhattan banking center managers.
He's a long-winded fella.
They put a little song together for you. So
a little song together for you.
We miss those guys' names, which is probably for the best. We don't want to diss them. Whoa. Is this real? Go full screen.
It is even better.
Oh no.
Now that we're the same, two great companies come together. Now MBNA is B of A.
Oh no.
And it's one bank, one card, one name that's known all over the world.
Oh my god.
One spirit, we get to share it, leading us all to higher standards.
Oh my god.
The guy, by the way, is also like a 40-year-old bald guy that doesn't look anything like hipness at all.
Yeah, he's like Larry David's younger brother.
Yeah. You want to do the whole thing? Yeah.
Yes, please.
Do you like the Cowboys?
What? Do you like Cowboys?
Or your university?
This is amazing.
Do you like the Yankees?
Incredible example.
Or is NASCAR more your speed?
Somebody's got to bring that guy coffee in the
your
morning.
Choice.
Meanwhile, the guy's got a good voice. He's got a real good voice.
Totally. Too bad he doesn't have a soul.
This is the kind of songs that you sing when you don't have weed in your life.
Yeah.
When they're regularly piss testing you. This guy gets piss tested on the regular.
This is what sobriety gets you.
Meanwhile, he can sing. I can't do that.
No.
I can't sing like that.
He's great in his church choir, I bet.
Yeah. Oh, he kills it in the church choir. You think he wants dick?
He already had it.
Have you come to me?
I don't know.
I feel like I'm gonna be honest. I feel like someone could fuck his wife.
Have you come to me, Liam?
I feel like there's an opening there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, probably.
Have you?
No.
He's got more.
Am I looking into this?
He's got more of a BTK killer vibe.
Yeah. What is it? A BTK killer?
Yeah, throws on underwear, strangles boys. Throws on women's underwear.
Whoever this guy is, I'm sorry that we're. I'm sorry we're dissing you, and we don't mean it. What we would like to do is we'll offer you a hug and some weed.
Yeah, and you're very pixelated on the video, so we're just judging by pixelations mostly.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think you got maybe I'm just an asshole, but
we're totally assholes.
I don't feel empathy for that guy.
Oh, he's just a guy,
He's a banker. He's got a job. He's supporting his kids.
He's a Satanist. He's a member of the Church of of the corporate church of Lucifer. He's singing hymns to some idol, some devil idol. Fuck him.
Well, he's just, that's hilarious.
Think of the people he's exploiting. Just imagine working in a cubicle next to that cocksucker as he's writing a shitty song, and he's bringing you in and running it by you while he farts his cum farts into the air. You're having to smell that guy's disgusting emissions. He's like a human slug. I hate that. I just know he torments people. I know. I just know he torments underlings. That's why I have no compassion.
You think so?
Yes.
I see. I saw him as like a fatherly figure in the office. Gives out a lot of hugs, but always had a desire to be a singer, and that this is what he put together. And then a few people of his office were proud of him. A bunch were very embarrassed. It's very embarrassing, and there's going to be a lot of talking behind closed doors.
It's humiliating.
But there's a few girls, like a few chubby secretaries, that thought he did awesome.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure that there's other brainwashed drones who are like, Carl did such an excellent job. I really felt our higher standards coming through his song. He really represents the B of A higher standard.
The moment where he starts singing, One Bank, you know, like coming together, where he's like, car. When you realize that he's really doing this, he's really going full emotions about a bank.
Full passion. It's his life, and it's his team.
Passionate about being on Team B of A.
Yeah, and they made a merger. He gets kind of nasty later on in the song where he kind of, this is another bank.
Fuck Wells Fargo.
One of the lyrics is, "What's in your pocket? It's not Capital One." That's a lyric. He's dissing Capital One.
I would diss Capital One.
Would you?
Yeah, fuck Capital One.
Fuck all of them, right?
Yeah, fuck
but
all of them.
We need a system.
I don't have a problem. I mean, whatever. With
Bitcoins, bro.
Bitcoins. Yeah, bro.
That's what I hear. Works online, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't understand what Bitcoin is.
Some shit you used to buy DOD characters online. Is it DOD?
I don't care.
What's DOD?
Dungeons or Dragons.
It's torrent.
I'll take the dragons.
What are you there? What are you fucking playing Dungeons or Dragons?
Hey, let's trade coins, guys.
This Bitcoin thing is an online currency that they're experimenting with? That's what kids are doing these days?
Yeah, I know, because it's the only way you can give money to Julian Assange just with Bitcoin, and it's kind of complex.
He's so cutting edge.
Yeah.
I want to hang with him.
I do too.
I bet he would say embarrassing shit to chicks, though.
Julian?
Yeah.
He'd get a little cocky, wouldn't
he? He'd get a little cocky. Something embarrassing.
Like what?
I don't know. He wants to be that guy. You know, he's that guy because he wants to be that guy. You know,
yeah.
I mean, even his non-emotional response to everything, you know, has stayed, you know, it's all calculated. You know, the real Julian Assange is a video of him dancing. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah. No, but that's what I was just thinking.
You got to see it. Pull up the video. Pull up the video. Julian Assange dancing.
What's he dancing?
He's just a dude, okay? He's dancing all freaky and crazy. And there's nothing wrong with dancing freaky and crazy. Don't get me wrong. But when I see you do that, I know you got some personality in there.
Yeah.
This whole, you know, this thing that you're doing, this weird, you know, staid response to everything.
Is it dancing?
You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's like this just chosen plane of emotionless, you know, this house arrest and the whole, I mean, he's like, he's that guy. You know what I'm saying?
He's a celebrity.
Oh, fuck yeah, he is. He's giant.
Super celebrity.
And, you know, and he's doing some good things. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
A lot of good things.
I'm
not criticizing any of his work. Right. I'm just saying he's a character. You know, he's fascinating.
Well, no, what it is there's a, when you, it's the showmanship.
Yeah,
seems kind of weird when it's placed in such a close proximity to activism. It's when it's like those two things never mix well together, which is why Anonymous is so fucking cool.
Yeah,
because they don't have you don't know who it is.
Yeah,
you never see them. It's just this robotic voice talking, and so their egos don't get into the mix, and it makes them so much more powerful than when you've got a human being and a human being's ego and the ego, when it gets put into the spotlight, always is magnified. Even if you have a very refined personality that you've been working on, once you get into the moral realm of things, your ego just really sticks out. And I think that's what you're seeing. That's what everybody sees. I posted his MasterCard commercial, the new WikiLeaks MasterCard commercial. I don't know if you saw it or not.
No.
It's cool, but somebody posted on my Twitter. They were like, why does he always got to put his face on everything? Why does he always have to do that? Isn't WikiLeaks bigger than him? Isn't the movement bigger than him as the mascot?
Well, he thinks that in the cult of personality days that we're living in, I'm just going to assume he thinks this. I don't really know that he thinks this. In the cult of personality days that we live in today, that maybe it would be a good thing to have a figurehead, someone who people get attached to and follow them around. And, you know, you get invested in what's going on in their life. Like a Kim Kardashian, but for information.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs.
I think that Steve Jobs. Well, no, I know everyone. I mean, listen, I think it's a very desirable place to be. It's for a human being. It's.
I don't even just think that. I think maybe he thinks it helps.
you think that there's a.
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
No,
that, you know, it does allow when you do have some sort of cult of celebrity type thing going on. It does allow you to have a certain amount of guaranteed attention.
But
to a subject.
This is why I think the model that Anonymous is using for hacktivism, as they call it, is so much better than the model WikiLeaks is using.
Mm-hmm.
Is because when someone from Anonymous gets arrested, or they say they caught someone from Anonymous, it doesn't seem to affect Anonymous at all. If someone supposedly from Anonymous, you know, got caught doing some shitty thing, it doesn't really affect Anonymous because no one knows how many people are in the organization.
They're anonymous with anonymous. Meaning like the people are members of Anonymous.
They're anonymous.
Anonymous.
But that's what's so cool about them.
But aren't they all connected? They communicate with each other?
Somebody
gets busted, you have to assume.
Yeah, I'm Red Band. What's your name? Voodoo? Yeah.
No, I'm sure that they... I mean, obviously, there's got to be some organizing force in that group.
Right.
But we don't know what it is. And so because of that, it makes them a million times more powerful, because if one of them gets taken out, it's like, think of Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is this network of terrorists, and the face of Al-Qaeda for a while was Osama bin Laden. So when you have a face to your organization, now you've got a target, and people can attack that target. It's like when they now, you know, in the mainstream news, they always say, like, there's a new face to Al-Qaeda, and it's some other guy, and you just... feel so bad for that guy because you know he's going to get killed. Like, that guy's next to get shot by a drone or whatever. But that weakens Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda would be so much more powerful if nobody knew who their leader was.
Shh, dude, you're giving out a good plan to the enemy right now.
The enemy. Yeah, right.
The banks. You could ruin our way of life.
Yeah, like Al-Qaeda. I bet Al-Qaeda tunes into the Joe Rogan Experience.
Yeah, you never know, bro. We're international, son.
Yeah.
I got downloads from New Zealand. Well, holla at your boys.
Who knows, man? They're pretty smart. Maybe they just put these, like, figureheads out there just for fun. Maybe bin Laden was just, like, somebody's maintenance guy. And they're like, hey, would you mind playing the part of the leader of my organization? Who knows?
The problem I had, by the way, going back to the Bitcoin, the problem I have with Bitcoin is that I heard that recently it was actually hacked. And so that's just right there shows you that you don't want you wouldn't be able to have your currency in your hand. While it's great in theory and everything like that, it's still like, are you going to invest in Bitcoin? Are you going to put really real money into Bitcoin and actually, that's a gamble.
Well, right now, I think there's no real way to completely secure anything, right?
Right.
I mean, hackers eventually figure out almost anything.
How to get anything.
If there weren't any criminal penalties for hacking into systems, imagine what more they would accomplish if we didn't arrest the best ones.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
get them jobs,
get them jobs with the government.
But you're now CEO of Facebook.
Well, that Mitnick character, he got arrested legit. And when he got out, he wasn't even allowed to go online for a certain amount of time.
God, that would suck.
God. You detach yourself from the cultural experience.
How do they make sure you're not going online, though? How do they keep you from doing that?
It's a good question. I don't know. They might just say it, and if they find evidence that you did, that's a violation of parole.
Right.
They probably put a chip in you. Oh, you're a hacker? Well, you get this chip.
A chip like a inside dog. Of you? Like a dog?
Yeah.
So I could follow you around? Yeah, I bet if some people, if you ask them, you want to be let out early and you have a chip that you keep for the rest of your life, we'll let you out a year early and put this chip in you and keep it for the rest of your life so you always know where you are. A lot of people would say, okay.
Yeah,
for a whole fucking year out of jail?
But people would just cut that chip out, so you have to put it somewhere like inside your penis. Spine. Yeah, in your penis, because you wouldn't fucking try.
Your spine.
These dudes would peel open their dick like a catfish. They would open their dick up like a catfish to try to find that thing. Don't think they're not. Go to BME. Go to the Body Modification Extreme. Yeah.
It's the worst.
Fucking, this dudes do all kinds of horrible shit to their dicks. There's dudes that, there's a guy out there somewhere. If you came up to him and go, "Hey man, I want to eat your cock. Put it on a hot dog roll for me. Chop it off." There's guys that would chop off their dick and put it out just because it's the ultimate, I don't give a fuck move. You want to go hardcore on me? I'll go hardcore for you. You know, if you're working, or rather you show up and there's a bar and the guy who's working has nose rings and lip rings and his ears are stretched out and he's got a tattoo on his face. And
what's
he's
the new ear stretch thing?
I don't know. But if you saw that guy with all his nose things and ear things and lip things and you said, "Chop your dick off and put it on a bun for me," he might go, "Yeah, bitch." He might just slice off his cock for you.
Yeah.
Right? Then you're back to hacking Facebook, right?
Back to hacking Facebook? What do you mean?
Because we were talking about putting the chip in the dick. And,
yeah. Well, yeah, you wouldn't allow that.
I heard some story about in Serbia, there was this a bar that was having like every week they were having contests to see who was the most badass. And so they were doing stupid shit like punching each other and then burning each other, and it was getting really intense. And one of the guys said to the other guy, he's like, "I'm going to go outside and I want you to cut off my fucking head." And he went out there and the guy chops his head off. He asked him to do it. And it was like the ultimate. He won, basically, because he went as far as he could go.
Shit.
Yeah.
This is in Serbia?
Yeah, I think it was in Serbia. Yeah.
God damn.
Now this, by the way, that story, I did not verify.
Let's not Google that one. Let's pretend it's real. Yeah. That's the one thing that I hate about Google. I don't want to lose stories like that. Like, there's certain stories that I won't Google. No. I'm keeping that one. Yeah. That one, fiction, real. It might be about Sasquatches. I don't give a shit. That one, I'm not even Googling.
Well, it's like fairy tales back in the day. Somebody told you about like the legend of Johnny Appleseed, and you're just like, I have no idea to know if this is real, so it's real to me.
Nobody thought Johnny Appleseed was real but you.
No, Appleseed's real.
Nobody, son.
He actually was.
You're the only one.
I gotta come out and say that I've kind of thought Johnny Appleseed is real.
He's a real person.
Dude, it's based on historical facts. We have the documents.
Actually, yes. Let me get
Ladies
my
gentlemen,
files.
We have the documents.
There wasn't a. I thought there was a guy who went around playing.
No, it was real.
All right, I don't think it's real, but. I'm going to never look into the chop the head off story.
I can kind of see it, though. I can
chop
see
the head off story.
You're super drunk. You've been eating. You've been drinking a shitload of Serbian vodka.
Yeah, and you probably want to end your life anyway. Your life sucks.
Yeah. And you know?
You're crazy.
It's like the ultimate.
You're hanging out with a bunch of people every week. You're stabbing each other and fucking burning each other. And you're like, let's just end this.
By the way.
End this and I win. It's the ultimate, like, flipping over the table. When you're playing cards and you're losing, you know?
Johnny Appleseed is real, by the way. He introduced apple trees to Ohio and Indiana and Illinois.
Well, I don't even know what Appleseed story is, to be honest with you. What is it? What is the Johnny Appleseed story?
He became an American legend while still alive, largely because of his kind and generous ways. He had great leadership in conservation, and he was like, he pretty much was really important to apples. And back then, you know, like a lot of people, apples were way more popular back then because we didn't have Doritos, you know? So he was like a pioneer for apples. He actually pretty much brought apples to different parts of the country.
Wow.
And I know this because Ohio was one of the bigger parts that grew apples and that he brought to and stuff like that.
The name Johnny Appleseed to me sounds so cartoonish that for some reason I always thought it was like a Disney cartoon.
He was born John Chapman. Johnny Appleseed is what they called him, kind of like, because he was like a superhero of apples. And
was there ever a movie, like an animated movie?
I'm sure there was.
Really, a Johnny Appleseed?
I'm sure. Well, he was became more of a legend in really boring schools and stuff like that. You know, like we never talked to him.
Of all the legendary figures, he is pretty fucking boring. I mean, he's never was an exciting figure. He went around planting apple trees.
Yeah, it's like getting behind those superheroes that don't have powers.
Yeah,
it's like what?
Well, what's back the then it was like, wow, you're bringing me a really good, delicious food I've never had before.
No, it's great if it comes through your neighbor.
Imagine having apples for your first time. Like, hey, I'm so tired of eating poop and stuff. And then they're like, oh, apple, what? This is like dessert.
I'm saying what he's doing is awesome. No doubt about it. I just didn't think it was I didn't know what the story was. I thought it was like a Winnie the Pooh thing.
Can I change the subject?
Sure. Please do.
Because you mentioned... I don't know what it is about Johnny Appleseed, man, but it puts me to sleep.
It's a fucking conversation killer.
Woo! Did you order the Walking Dead comic books yet?
No.
I just finished the entire series. I have never gotten addicted to a comic. I think I did when I, like, years and years ago, but...
Did you tell me this already? Shit. Did we talk about this already? Somebody else did.
We talked about it on the phone.
Right. How long ago was this?
This was a few weeks ago.
Okay. But it might have been you. It probably was you.
It is the... Have you read the comic book?
You told me about it. I actually haven't... I forgot to download it.
So what's awesome about this series is... The show is cool too. The show that came on, what was it, IFC, AMC? I can't remember. That was awesome too. But these comics, man, they are such an accurate portrayal of what it would be like to try to survive during a zombie attack with society collapsing that you become engrossed in their struggle for survival much more than just, you know, zombies biting people. It's not like a gore novel or gore comic book, even though it is gory. It's more of like the character arcs are so fucking cool because you just see these different characters go from being, you know, thinking that they're going to get through it or things are going to end or things are going to get better, and then realizing that things are never going to be better, and watching the way personalities change. It kind of it focuses on the idea of how if society collapsed, people would go crazy pretty fucking fast. Like, there would be some people who maintained ethics and morality, but there'd be a lot of other people who immediately just discarded those things and put their survival first no matter what. And it's awesome.
It looks like it's a free application too. Is it just like the first issue is free and then you can download the app?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, it's called The Walking Dead on the App Store.
It's so good, man. I in the last 2 weeks, I think I've spent over $200 on the whole series.
Are you serious?
I got hooked. I couldn't stop.
So there's a lot of issues.
Yeah, there's like 78 issues.
Oh, dude, that is bad.
I got hooked. I couldn't stop.
I couldn't stop. It's the best. It turned off, yeah. It's one of the best gifts you can give yourself because it is fucking brutal. They don't pull any, it's just like, they don't try to soften anything. There's no attempt to do the thing that movies do where it's going to, you know, it kind of gets better. There's no attempt at that. It's just realistically.
Don't tell me any more about how the stories go.
That's not really a spoiler.
There's a shitload of issues too.
God damn, they all have like 5 stars.
Yeah. Wow, this is awesome.
Well, is it? Does it follow the same plot as the TV show, or is it completely different?
In the TV show, and this, I don't want to. Spoiler alert! What do you say?
No, I don't want to hear it.
Did you see the TV show?
No,
you haven't seen it.
I just haven't seen it all. I've only watched one episode.
Okay, well then I won't say anything. But
I got one episode I watched. And I'm like, this show's good, man. I'm gonna fucking start watching this, and then I stopped.
It's vaguely. It is similar. They added some characters that aren't.
But the comic
book
is more brutal.
A million times better.
A million's a big number.
A quadrillion times better.
What is that? How many zeros?
I just looked that up. It's like, oh man, 100 billions or something like that. I just looked it up.
Is that like 1,000 trillion? Is that what it is?
It's so funny that you should ask that because I was on Wolfram Alpha yesterday trying to calculate how much money it would take to give everyone in America $1 million. And it was something like $250 billion. Cause I was thinking that if we took the Forbes magazine billionaires and we took all their money away and just gave it to everybody in the United States, there'd be like the entire population of the United States would be happy. And there'd be like 20 pissed off rich guys. Like, who cares? But as it turns out, it's not that much money when you break it up among all those people.
Yeah. And the real the real problem with giving everyone $1 million is that within a week, half of them would be broke. Within 1 week, if you gave everyone $1 million, like you said, this is life, okay? We are going to absolve all money and all debts, and everyone on the planet is going to get $1 million.
Yes.
If that was the new money, if like we said, we're all going to start equal, and then we'll barter from there. Within 2 months.
Sure.
There'd be people that would have giant corporations where they have billions of dollars, and there would be people that were totally broke, and there'd be people sucking dick for fucking rent money.
This isn't fair.
Yeah.
The system's corrupt.
Yeah. I didn't get your break. You caught a break, you lucky piece of shit.
Yeah.
And they'll fucking come after you, and there's going to be people that blow it all in Vegas, and there's going to be people that blow it all on fudge, you know?
It's true, man. That there are people who are just seem like, well, no, it's not even that crazy. It's like if you have a canoe and the rudder on the canoe or the rudder on the ship is fucked up, the ship's going to go in circles. That's just the way it works. And some people, they have this psychological rudder that's fucked up in their lives. And so they always, that's why you see people always going through the same patterns. Like, you know, I have friends where I've watched them, you know, again and again and again and again, basically just repeat the identical mistakes over and over again, but with different variables, but it's the same failure equation. But they're always just plugging in the same shitty variables, you know, like buying a car without getting it checked out first. And what do you know? The car broke down. And what do you know? The car dealer won't give me any money back because I signed a contract when I bought the car.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of shit.
Isn't that weird? They don't fix themselves. They keep on doing the same shit and they're not learning from their mistakes, which seems so odd. I know so many people like that also. It just blows my mind.
I think that's what karma is. When, you know, they talk about someone's karma, I think that's what it is. It's like this series. It's a combination of genetic factors, the way they look, mixing in with some thought constructs, the way they perceive reality, and those two things kind of meet together to make them always just repeat the same weird fucking cycle.
I can't imagine what it's like to be in the mind of a schizophrenic. I can't imagine what it's like to be in the minds of anyone with any like real serious debilitating or disease, mental disease, anything that makes you delusional or see life from a weird. So whenever I see someone in a real bad pattern, there's parts of me that says, well, I wonder if they have a very slight mental illness, you know, or a mental illness that's, you know, I mean, there's got to be grades of mental illness, you know, there's got to be a spectrum you know, from really completely batshit Charles Manson to, you know, whoa, you're just a little, you've got, we all know people that have like a distorted perception of reality and they twist reality up to kind of suit their purposes for the here and the now. You know, I think there's a spectrum of crazy, and a lot of people that repeat things over and over again and repeat it. There's a little crazy there. It may be not a lot, but there's some crazy. There's some disconnects, you know. And how does that lead into, you know, full blown, completely insane, fucking shooting up a post office? I mean, is it the same path, or is there different paths from the one, you know, the one few steps of crazy? But I think a lot of us have mental illnesses.
Well, that's the concept of mental illness is sometimes I'm skeptical about certain things that people in this society call mental illness, because it gets really confusing where, you know, for example, take depression. The diagnosis of depression, what goes along with it is, you know, environmental factors. Are you under stress? Is something shitty happening in your life? But then also, it apparently has something to do with a serotonin deficiency in your brain. And so you take these antidepressants, and they're called serotonin uptake reinhibitors, and they make it so that the serotonin kind of accumulates in your brain at a so that it doesn't, so that you have more serotonin and then you start feeling better. And that's all based on this diagnosis of depression. But it seems to me that even the label depression is fucking up what it really is. What's happening with these people is not depression. Depression makes it sound like it's like you got a cold or poison ivy or the flu or a rash or something like that. I don't think that's it. I think that depression is you're not interfacing with reality in the right way. You're not seeing how beautiful reality really is. You're not understanding the potential that you have, and that's resulting in not wanting to wake up in the morning and wanting to escape by sleeping all the time. So when doctors start saying, no, you have an endogenous depression and I'm going to prescribe to you antidepressants, it's like they're avoiding the real thing that's happening. Not now, people who are on antidepressants, if it's helping you, it's great. But I think that in a way, well, I'll just admit it. I was on antidepressants once. When I was in college, I got on antidepressants. And because I was fucking depressed, obviously. I fucking hated life. Everything, I mean, it was worse than hating life. It was like I couldn't feel anything. I literally could like feel no emotion.
Was it because of a girl or was it because of a reason of any kind?
You know, I don't think it was because of a girl. And I'm definitely it was because of a reason. And, you know, I don't know how deep I want to get into that. But I'm sure it has a lot to do with like family shit and just the model that I grew up in and not understanding. You know, not understanding a lot of the stuff that I understand now. Things just seem kind of grim, beyond grim. So they put me
the
on...
The future seemed grim or life in general seemed grim?
No, not even...
There's no joy in your life?
It's like... when somebody puts a rubber band around your finger and you can't feel it, mm-hmm. it's like somebody's done that to your instincts.
Before we go any further, I just want to stop right here for a second and say, you know, that we're not passing any judgment on how your mind works. And no one can ever say what's going on in this person's mind. I don't know. I mean, I have a thyroid problem, and I take thyroid pills for it. It's called hypothyroidism. It's genetic. It runs in my family. My mother has it. So there's a part of me that doesn't work right. Yeah. How do we know? I don't know how your brain works. There could be a part of your brain that's not working correctly, and supplementing it with certain chemicals that they treat antidepressants with could help you. So the idea that we're saying that everyone is depressed for the same reasons, I think we should careful about that.
Sure. I'm sorry if it sounds like I'm saying that.
No, but you're talking from your own personal experience, which is it's true for you. But I know people who need it. I know quite a few people who it's changed their life. So I don't know how his brain works. I would like to be him for a day. I'd like to figure out what the fuck that's all about. I would like for you to be me for a day and figure out what the fuck this is all about. You know, I think us trying to, you know, impart our thoughts on antidepressants, it's very easy to say you got to pull up your fucking boots and, you know, tighten that belt and fucking get to work and stop being such a pussy and be depressed. I think there's some people, there's a legit chemical issue. There's an imbalance or something.
Well, I'll tell you what I did. Well, I was on this shit called Zoloft.
Right.
Couldn't come. It, like, made it so that I couldn't fucking come.
That's the shit that Phil Hartman's wife was on, which killed him.
I didn't know that.
They won a lawsuit. I don't know how much money they got, but she was on Zoloft and cocaine, apparently, which makes you completely crazy. Zoloft and cocaine together, apparently, incites some sort of psychotic reaction.
Well, what happened...
Allegedly.
I didn't feel, like, psychotic, but it was definitely put me in this, like... I wouldn't call it a better place, but a more tranquil place. It was like there was some tranquility. But what ended up happening is I went on like a week and a half long camping trip out in the woods and stopped taking the antidepressants, and it was out, you know, way out in the fucking woods with, you know, which the coolest thing about going on a really long camping trip is no mirrors. You don't have a mirror to look at yourself, and you forget how important mirrors are, or how like looking at yourself is this like fascinating thing that people do all day long, that kind of you look at yourself to see how you look or where you're at, or you look tired or you look happy or your hair is fucked up. When that's gone, it's awesome. You're not looking. Now the reflection is in other people, the way that the people you're hanging out with are reacting to you. The reflection is in nature instead of in the mirror. And anyway, by the end of that camping trip, I felt happy. I felt stable and like good and like connected, and the world seemed beautiful. It was like I just needed to get outside. I just needed to get out of the environment that I was in and like be in the presence of like real nature with hawks flying in the air. It really did. I mean, I don't want to say it fixed me, but it definitely, the effect of just being in nature for 8 days exceeded the effect of being on Zoloft for 6 months by 100 times. And so what I'm saying is, yeah, definitely people have, I mean, think of this is a fucking very complicated computer floating around in our skulls here. And you can't think that everyone's computer is just going to function correctly, or there aren't going to be some wires that are mixed up. But I'm not certain that psychiatrists, when they prescribe these antidepressants, are also suggesting alternate ways to live and ways to and I know that some people take antidepressants in conjunction with psychologists, but again, to me it seems like when you go to a psychologist while you're on an antidepressant, maybe you're distancing yourself a little bit from some emotions that you really need to be feeling, some places that you really need to be. Now, I agree with you. If you're on antidepressants out there and they're helping you, keep taking the fucking antidepressants. But if you're on antidepressants and you just kind of feel like you're putting a Band-Aid numb on something or numb, there are other ways to escape from the evil grip of depression, which is the worst, man. I do have some like depressed friends, and it's like being in a quicksand pit emotionally. Mm-hmm. You don't know how to get the fuck out, and it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. But there are, you know, nature is a very powerful thing, and that's where we're supposed to be anyway. You know, that's where our ancestors came from, and it's been a very short time that we haven't been out there.
What do you think it is, though, that causes people to get in that, if it's not a chemical issue, if it's a truly just a behavioral issue or a thought process issue that causes people to become depressed and get caught in that funk? What purpose do you think that serves? Like, why is that there? You know, do you look at things like that? Like,
yeah,
I look at addictions, you know, and I'm always like, well, why is that there? I look at compulsive behavior. Why the fuck is that there? There's got to be an issue for that. Like, I think, I mean, but whatever, regardless of what I think, why do you think that's there?
The depression?
Yeah. Why is depression there? Why is there this thing that's like a consistent thing amongst groups of people, and it's very common? Like, what would be the purpose of that in nature?
Well, it's that I don't know if there's a purpose to it.
Do you think it's a symptom of the way we're living?
It's called, there's this idea called the gunas, and it's the modes of the material universe. In Hinduism, in some forms of Hinduism, the material universe gets broken up into three forms. It gets simplified into these three forms called the gunas, which is the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, and the mode of goodness. And so everyone is experiencing some version of these modes of being. So these modes, they attribute them to parts of the world. So cities are considered to be in the mode of passion. Places where things are rotting, like junk heaps, and places where there's a lot of death are considered to be in the mode of ignorance. And nature is considered to be in the mode of goodness. So there's symptoms of each of people who are in each of these modes. So people who are in the mode of ignorance, the symptoms are very similar to the symptoms of depression. They sleep too much. They sleep all the time. They eat shitty food. The way they put it is they eat dead things. But what that means is they're not eating things that are good for them. They're just eating things that are poison. Or the way they put it is they eat things that taste bad and make you feel bad. That's how they say it. Now, the mode of passion is, the symptoms of the mode of passion are, you want to fuck, you want to make money, you're out there, you're working, you're Mike Tyson in his prime, you're fucking like, you're just fully into the universe. And the way they put it is, you eat things that taste good, but that make you feel bad, is the way they put it. So you eat like people, you're drawn to like shit that like in the initially is like
rich food.
Yeah, rich food and stuff like that. Or even, experientially, you know, you're like doing like crazy shit or eating ecstasy, you know, that makes you feel good in the moment. But then the end result is you kind of like are hungover for half a week if you take impure, non-pharmaceutical grade MDMA, which would be awesome to have. Then the mode of goodness is the way they put that is you eat things that maybe don't taste so great initially, but then make you feel really good, that are really good for you. You know, like some people would say initially when you start exercising, it's in the mode of goodness, because when you are fucking convince your body to get out of bed and go for a jog, sometimes it's the best feeling on the planet. But when you first get going, it doesn't feel that great. You've got to like get your body to limber again and get out there again. But man, when the afternoon rolls around after a morning run and you feel your muscles are aching and your body's more relaxed than it's been, you feel great. So that's because you did something that could be considered in the mode of goodness. So to answer your question, I think depression is the modern terminology for people who have gotten themselves primarily in the mode of ignorance. And they, you know, they need to, a way to get out of the mode of ignorance is to, it sounds kind of obvious, but to begin to engage in things that are more in the mode of passion or the mode of goodness. So, you know, people will tell you, if you're feeling depressed, go jogging. Drink some smoothies, take vitamins, start taking care of your body, clean your house. Depressed people have filthy houses. They inevitably, because they're literally laying in dead shit. You go to a depressed person's house and there will inevitably be rotting food. They leave rotting food out and they're filthy. And that's like what the mode of ignorance is. And the reason they're doing that is because they're avoiding taking care of things. They can't push themselves out of it.
Is it possible that being in a pattern like that for a certain period of time can alter your brain chemistry to the point where it's actually measurable, where they can say, oh, you have a deficient you know, blah, 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 this part of your brain. And it's because the real reason is because of your pattern of thinking, but it's diagnosed as a chemical issue.
Yeah, just like your pattern of eating. If you eat certain things for a certain amount of time, you turn into a fatty. You know, it's like, it's the same thing. It's just a more of a, probably a neurological form of that. You know, it's a neurological obesity.
But again, this is, we're just guessing that this is for, you know, this is for very specific types of mental illnesses, that, that the types that, you know, you feel like you had, not for people that have some sort of a congenital issue where their brain's not functioning correctly from the get-go.
Well, I think that for people who are depressed and who've solely been listening to a psychiatrist, their prognosis, they can feel like they're in a pretty dire situation because they've been convinced that their motherboard is fucked up and right. The only cure for it is corporate-created chemicals that they have to take for the rest of their lives. And if they get off of it, then they get dizzy and fucked up and they'll just end up cutting their wrists. Now, I think that that's a pretty sad state of being to be in, where the only way that you think you can feel normal is by enjoying these corporate manufactured synthetic forms of happiness. You know, that's the only way. It's like, imagine only being able to smell synthetic flower smells, like shitty Paris Hilton perfumes. Well, I think that's what, and you know, that's how you could smell flowers. Well, I think that's what some antidepressants are. I think a corporation came up with a way to cook your brain in a certain way with these chemicals to allow you to experience a synthetic version of happiness as opposed to an authentic version of happiness. And I think that for many, many, many people who are depressed and on antidepressants, and perhaps this is naive, and again, if your antidepressants are really making you happy, then you're fucking happy. But I think that there are ways to shift your vibe, to change your life, to work on the different things that you, the loose strings that are hanging out of your life, and start experiencing like real happiness, which is, you know, I think that's a hopeful thing to hear if you're super depressed.
I think you're putting down a great guideline. All I'm saying is that I don't think it applies to everyone, and I think there are people that have a serious biochemical issue. There are a lot of people that are your way as well, though. You know, it's just, you know, some people get real sensitive about this, and they're right. You know, some people say, you know, hey man, you guys shouldn't be saying that. You don't know what the fuck it's like. You know, my situation. I'm not crazy. I had an issue. You know, I'm trying to be as positive as possible, but I have an issue.
Let me just say one more time, so that I don't get like a shitload of angry Facebook messages. I am in no way advocating getting off your medication. I'm not saying stop taking your medication, bro, and just go smell a flower. You know, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying there is hope that you don't have to pay however much you're paying a month to take those chemicals. I really think that there are there are really like common sense things that people just forget about when they get depressed. Because when you're depressed, you just forget.
Like sunlight.
Yeah, like sunlight. Cleaning your fucking house. Get a maid.
Open the windows.
Get a maid. Just get a maid to clean your house if you're too down to clean your house. Just get a maid. Go find a nice library that's air conditioned and like sit in the library and read or write while a maid cleans your house, and come back to your clean house and see how good that makes you feel.
Yeah.
Simple little tiny, tiny little things that you can try that will alleviate some of the environmental things that are keeping that the depressive cycle going.
Dude, you should be a life coach.
Mm-hmm. I got a bachelor's degree in psychology, Joe.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. But that's, I mean, that doesn't mean anything. That's
why I always called Duncan for advice.
Meaningless.
Do you remember when you were dating a particular girl and she was trying to get you to quit comedy and you're going to go work on your PhD?
I certainly do.
You should have done that.
How rude.
What a dick.
I'm just kidding.
Do you mean that,
no,
Ryan?
No, yeah,
no. Dude, little hobo's going to visit you in the middle of the night right now. The next bad trip you have, little hobo's going to be there to hold your hand and take you on a walk between the howling.
Oh, man. Yeah, Ryan, I remember those days.
That was so crazy.
But you know what, man? There is some part of me that, like, that to this day, you know, thinks about what that kind of life would be like. Like, I for the show that I was working on for Comedy Central that didn't get picked up,
that video is hilarious, by the way. It's on the web, the Stoned Ape Theory.
Thanks,
if people want to Google What's the best way to find that video?
Google search Stoned Ape Theory on YouTube. It pops up.
Does it? Right but a away. Lot of there's yeah. a lot of articles on the Stoned Ape Theory too, right?
I think it's right under you talking about the Stoned Ape Theory on YouTube.
Actually, what's the other video the body surfing one you did with Tim and Eric? That was fucking hilarious.
That's called Legend of the Pipers.
Have you seen that?
It's the second one. If you Google it, there's a second one. The second one shows a little monkey in an animation. It's an animated. It says clip from Comedy Central's pilot Thunderbrain. You got to see it because it's fucking awesome.
Thanks, Joe.
It's really fun.
But when we were doing that, we were getting some B-roll of like scientific, just me like around super crazy scientific shit. So we were in like a laboratory that was working on solar panels, and there was a doctor there who was working on, you know, trying to lower the cost of producing solar panels so that it becomes a feasible option for people and we can get off our addiction to oil. Strangely, his study was being funded by BP, which was really confusing to me. Like, I didn't understand that. And I asked him, like, BP, why are they trying to, like, get solar panels going? Doesn't that hurt them? And he's like, corporations are – there's so many different, you know, wings and parts of a corporation that some of them don't even agree with each other with what they're doing. But anyway, I said, wow, man, it must feel really good to be working on something that – if you like figure out what you want to figure out, it'll transform the planet for the better. And he, like, in all seriousness, no hint of irony or anything weird, he looked at me and he's like, well, it's our sacred duty to help humanity. And it was like, oh fuck, man, that is really cool. Cause this isn't like some, this guy's not bullshitting. He's not just like, it's some bar leaning over. He's not on a podcast slurping back coconut water stoned out of his mind. He's in a laboratory fucking working on solar panels,
right?
Because he believes it's his sacred duty to help humanity.
Hmm.
You know, he's pushing it to the nth degree there, you know. And I found that, like, there's something real about it. And
yeah,
you know, to this day I think, well, you know, I know that stand-up helps people, it makes them laugh, and I think it's a very potent art form, but still I think, man, I wonder. You always kind of wonder, like, what if I had become like a psychologist? You know, what if I had done that and like really gone deep into understanding the inner workings and the mechanisms that make human beings get into these shitty patterns? You know, maybe I would have come up with some great way to help people, you know, something more than a joke about spraying cum on the Pentagon, or like, you know what I mean? Like, I really love my life. So
I think it's a bad thing to, if as long as you're enjoying yourself, I think it's a bad thing to question what if, you know, would I be happier? Right. What if this, what if that? I think if you find something, it could be anything, but if you find something that agrees with your personality and you're passionate about it and you pursue it, There's goodness in that. There's goodness. There's certainly goodness in creating new solar panels that are more efficient and allow us. There's certainly goodness to get away from the grid and get away from the need for foreign oil and all that jazz. But there's also good in everything, man. There's good in being a badass soccer player.
Right.
People want to watch some fucking Diego Maradona motherfucker who kicks the goal in when, you know, it's not supposed to, you know, it's like it's a really close game and this fucking guy manages to wiggle through and knock one in. Or when someone, you know, some Michael Jordan character shoots that three-pointer to win the game. And, you know, when you see things like that, anything you see, whether it's a beautiful painting, whether it's, you know, some book that you read that really fucking was gripping, you couldn't put it down. All those things enhance life. They all create energy. They all create bursts of energy. You know, I mean, some definitely, I mean, you look in the terms of the greater good for humanity, some will definitely be better. You know, it's much better to create a great solar panel than to write a dick joke. But,
yes.
But as long as you're doing what you want to do, I think if there's one thing that you can harp on in this life, is it don't do a bunch of shit that you don't really want to do because you're not sure if you can do what you want to do, because if you do what you want to do, it's hard and you might not make it. And fuck, man, that's just, you're going to live a life of second guessing and failure, and just, you're never going to believe in yourself. You're going to know that you never went after the one thing that you really truly wanted. That's whatever the fuck it is, man, whether it's being a solar panel scientist, or whether it's being a guy who writes fucking classical music, whatever the fuck it is, man, you just got to find what that thing is.
Yeah, there's a I feel, I always do this, I'm sorry to always quote the Bhagavad Gita.
Well, that's one of the most awesome things to quote ever.
There is a quote in the Bhagavad Gita that goes, it's better to be an honest street sweeper than a dishonest king. It's very dangerous to follow another man's path. And so the idea is, you know, exactly what you said. You should do what you're drawn to, not what you think you should be doing. You should do the thing that you're attracted to doing. That's who you are. That's what you're meant to be. You know, if you saw a dog that was trying to act like a horse, it would be hilarious, but it would be kind of sad and fucked up. You know, it's like you're supposed to be, what makes a thing beautiful is when it's in its purest form, not when it's trying to create an alternate version of what it is.
Like when that lady was dressing her chimp up and putting diapers on him and shit, and then one day just
ripped her face
off. Had to let everybody know what the fuck is up.
God, that's so fucked up when people put lipstick on a chimp.
Oh. Unless the chimp's
right. To eat your own, Duncan, to eat your own.
Unless you're drawn to putting lipstick on chimps, in which case, go for it.
Yeah, if that's your thing, man.
Yeah.
You never know. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right, though. You gotta find it, whatever the fuck it is. For some people, though, it's hard to find. You're stuck in some shitty fucking town. There's nothing to do. Everybody around you is retarded. You know, it's like that becomes an issue.
Well, you got to start. You know the thing you got to start with doing? You got to start, even if you're not a comedian. This is the thing I realized. You got to start carrying a notebook around with you or a little piece of whatever, something to write your thoughts down on. Because throughout the day, you have really cool thoughts. You have really interesting thoughts.
Some people don't.
Well, I think it's like fishing. And I think that your notebook or your pad of paper is your fishing net for ideas. And if you haven't been fishing for a long time, yeah, you don't have a lot of ideas. But if you just start getting in the habit of, even if you don't think you're going to like have amazing ideas every day, you just have sometimes really low level ideas, really simple, basic ideas, or even something you need to take care of. If you start writing that shit down, then I think the bigger ideas start coming, your nets out.
That's a great point. I like that idea. I like the way you describe it, that it's a net. That sounds cool.
But let's face it, some of those nets are going to be like, Mountain Dew Code Red is good.
Sure, why? Yeah. Of course.
That's like people's Twitter feeds, man.
Yeah.
Your Twitter feed is a 140-character net, you know? Yeah. I mean, there's certain people on Twitter that I just had to stop following. I had to stop following when I signed up. Like, if you're following me on Twitter and you see that thing, the Joe Rogan Daily, and people go, hey, put me in your daily. I have no say over who goes in that. This is what it is. It's just a program that I signed up for. And what it basically does is I follow a lot of interesting people on Twitter, and it'll take links from their stories that they put up on Twitter. And then it'll put together like a little newspaper of the top things. I don't know how it categorizes them. I have no idea how it does it.
Yeah.
What people are probably saying, though, is when they say put you in their daily, there is the option to put certain people in your daily. So it will...
The same thing?
Onto them. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, so you can actually program
it? Yeah, you could kind of do a little tweaks here and there, like having like a group of friends that it grabs from more than other group of friends.
Okay.
I played around with it. Who fucking cares?
That's cool.
Yeah, I might have to look into it. But you can't specifically pick an article or anything to put in.
Yeah, I don't think so. And that's what sucks. So you pick a group of friends, and then, you know, Duncan says, hey, look at my penis. You like my penis? And then it looks like you picked it out. You know?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I get for tweets.
Following Duncan, to look at my penis tweets are in abundance.
I can't stop tweeting. I want people to look at my penis. It's important to me.
Well, you haven't been here since that Anthony Weiner guy.
Weiner.
Yeah, Anthony Weiner. Yeah.
Are we really? I mean, is this a real life thing or is this a movie? It really does. As things go on, you know, the concept of life as a hologram or life as some sort of a computer simulation, it sounds great and funny and, you know, like, wow, that's crazy. But what if... But every now and then, a thing like this Anthony Weiner, Andrew Weiner, what was his name? Anthony Weiner.
I think it was Anthony Weiner.
Whatever the fuck his first name is. His last name is unmistakable. Unmistakable? Unmistakable. And the idea that that guy would get into some dick situation, it almost feels like we're being fucked with.
It feels like a prank.
It feels like as, you know, whatever, the end of time rolls closer and closer, reality is getting so fucking weird that it almost is it's begging us to not take it seriously anymore. It's almost like...
That's awesome.
It's almost like... Have you seen Michelle Bachmann? Do you know who Michelle Bachmann is?
Yeah, I know about the Gacy gaffe.
How about her fucking husband is gay as shit?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Dude, Dave Foley tweeted this about Michelle Bachmann's husband being this guy who performs these anti-gay things where they fix gay people, yeah. Anti-gay counseling.
Those guys are always gay who yeah. do that.
Oh, the dude, please pull up that guy. Pull up, I think Marcus Bachmann is his name, allegedly homosexual. I'll let the people decide. But my God, he seems gay. Holy shit, he seems gay.
Do you know about her John Wayne Gacy, the thing she did with John Wayne Gacy?
No.
She was in the town where Gacy killed a lot of people, and she said something along the lines of like, well, you know, I believe in the words of John Wayne, or, you know, I believe in the spirit of John Wayne, because she thought John Wayne was from that town and didn't know it was John Wayne Gacy. She confused one of the most notorious serial killers ever with
one of the most loved movie stars,
great cowboy, and she was and she was like saying she's such an idiot. Is she? What's her deal, man? Is she running for president or
fuck
something?
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
Check this out though. This is from like 2 years ago, right? Is it the original thing 2 years ago?
Yeah,
like,
I believe so.
His voice. I mean, it's hilarious when you hear this.
You got to hear him. He's as gay as the day is long, man. I mean. He's just as gay.
To winning the GOP nomination. But what about the man that's backing her? Her husband, Dr. Marcus Bachmann, is drawing heated criticism for his highly questionable stance on homosexuality. Just take a listen to this.
We have to understand barbarians need to be educated. They need to be disciplined. And just because someone feels it or thinks it doesn't mean that we're supposed to go down that road. That's what's called the sinful nature. And we have a responsibility as parents and as authority figures not to encourage such thoughts and feelings to move into the action steps.
Whoa, first of all, the guy has this look about him like...
Hey, have a hot dog.
Yeah, he like one of those southern guys who owns a barbecue place.
Yeah.
He's got like a fat face and it's slippery.
Yeah.
He looks like the guy who's always sweating. Like everywhere he goes, he's like, there's a mantra going in his head. Hope nobody knows I'm gay. I hope nobody knows I'm gay. I hope nobody knows I'm gay. And it's causing him to profusely sweat.
Rosy
he's
cheeks
sweaty.
All the time.
He's like shiny. In every picture you see of him, he's like shiny
but
and sweaty.
But he sounds like a disciplinarian. Like he sounds like he would be into like
bondage.
Leather butt plugs and like really like because he's talking about educating barbarians and disciplining people. It's I would love to see what techniques he uses.
Diapers
he's
and
calling,
being spanked.
He's calling gay dudes barbarians.
You are a barbarian, and let me tell you, my friend, the only way that we're going to get your desire for cock out of you is by putting as many cocks into your mouth as we can.
Yeah,
those guys are fucked up, man. One of those guys, you know, there was this kid just committed suicide. You know about that story? This kid committed suicide. He was going through one of these anti-gay programs that these sadomasochistic Christian freaks are putting people through. But he killed himself. He committed suicide, and they caught up with a doctor who'd been behind the study. Exact same thing. Like, the doctor was clearly gay. This is a doctor that had an escort who they caught him with in Europe. Who this guy who he said he just hired to carry his bags?
Oh, I
remember
that guy. Yeah.
That guy. He's like one of these mad scientists who are like super repressed homosexuals, and it's coming out in the form of trying to transform gay kids into straight kids.
He took a gay hustler with him on vacation.
Yes, to carry his luggage.
To carry his luggage.
Yeah.
Would you see the Bruno movie? Remember Bruno? They went to that guy that.
I didn't see Bruno.
You never saw fucking Bruno, really?
No, I have it on DVD.
Too. Oh, you got it. They went to one of these guys that turns around, and he is like super gay. You can tell the guy's like, no, that's just wouldn't be. You know, like it's just exactly looks gay, acts gay.
Anti-gay counselors, they're just trolling. They're just looking for dick. That's all they are. They get together. They got to figure all these guys are gay too. Everybody just shuts up and counsel each other and suck each other's cocks and
yeah.
Just go about your business.
Yeah, they stumble. That's how they think of it when they end up doing that.
I can't believe
I did it again.
The other day I was coming home. I couldn't wait. I sucked a cock on the way home. Don't worry about it. You're still with the Lord. You're still with the Lord.
One step at a
time. Yeah, what about my cock? You know, you suck that guy's cock. You don't suck my cock?
I mean, talk about a weird job. That's a weird job to be a gay guy. And like,
why is there so much disdain for homosexual people? That's the real question. What is it? Is it a fear that you're one too? Is it, I mean, what the, I grew up around gay people. I grew up in San Francisco from the time I was 7 till I was 11. I was constantly around gay people. My neighbors were gay and flamboyant. You know, to me it was normal. It was just, yeah. Just they're just different. You know, it's a different thing. I don't get where the hate comes from. I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense. I don't think there's anything wrong with making fun of them because I think they're funny. And I think you should be able to make fun of everything. Everything is funny. I'm funny. You're funny. We're all stupid. We all do dumb shit. And that shit should be made fun of. You know, so gay people are not off limits when it comes to humor. But the hate, where the fuck is it coming from? Is it a fear that you're one of them as well? What is it?
I think it's primarily a result of people who are in fucked up Christian cults is what I think it is. I think these people have been conditioned from when they were a child to have these bizarre repressed libidos that have their roots in some kind of terrible interpretation of the New Testament. And that ends up coming out with seeing, you know, gay people as an abomination because of the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. Look
Maybe
at what God
what
did
it
to
is,
Sodom and Gomorrah.
Is like 5,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, they all had their Andy Dicks. They all had like gay dudes who just completely out of control, just grabbing cocks and pissing on police officers and shit. It was just like that was the norm when it came to gay dudes.
Yeah,
and that was only a few Andy Dicks around.
That's not
only a few left over.
I mean, the truth is, if you look up, read Socrates. Those guys were all fucking
gay as fuck.
Gay. They were all gay. Yeah. And so I think more likely what it is that.
Would historians say that they're gay, or would historians say that the times were different and that heterosexual men had sex with boys on a regular basis back then? I think they would say that, right?
Well, I mean, you call it whatever you want. They were gay. Call it whatever you want.
Do you think
gay.
That all those Romans were gay? Do you think there was just a like when the Romans were fucking young boys? And
So let's say I said to you, Joe, yesterday I had sex with 4 teenage boys. What would you think I was?
I would say, well, you were experimenting. Because as far as I know, you weren't gay until today.
You got any drawings of it?
I'd give you one day free pass.
Okay.
And queered them.
Well, I think it's just that at the time, at that time then, it was considered like a fetish.
Well, here's the question. When guys go to jail and they're in jail for a long time and they have sex with men, are they gay? Do they become gay? If they weren't gay before they went in, are they gay now forever?
Like, so what's gay? Is gay being attracted to guys? Is that what gay is?
That's the question. Is it a guy who has sex with guys, or is it a guy who's actually attracted to guys? Like, what if you're a gay porn star and you're like, I'm like, whatever, want to fuck me? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Just give me that money. Okay,
just give me that check.
There's been a lot of those guys, by the way, that claim straight. You know, there was a fucking VH1 special on one guy. There was a special, and I believe it was VH1, but it was one of those cable channels where it's like real fast cuts back and forth. And I remember one of them, the guy looks at the camera and he goes, anal sex is the bomb. And the guy was straight, and he had a girlfriend, and him and his girlfriend, I mean, it could have been a gigantic troll, but it didn't seem like a troll. It seemed like she really believed that he was straight, and he was just doing this for the money. And, you know, and he's like, my girlfriend, she doesn't like that I do it, but the money's awesome, so I just do it, you know, but I'm not gay. And then you see him in the scene going, anal sex is the bomb. And you're like, whoa, what? What is going?
Well,
is that, that guy's gay. That guy's in denial, and he's using that job as an excuse to bang dudes. But if you go to jail and you have sex with a guy, are you gay forever?
No, I think that's desperation. I think if you are in there for life and you start getting fucked and stuff like that, you start acting gay and stuff, right. I think that's just desperation. But if you take fucking the hottest chick in the world, put him in the room with that guy will still go, holy shit, I can't wait to fuck. You know, like, I think he would be immediately fucking that girl with, you know, where a gay person would be like, ew, boobies, you know.
There was this anthropologist in my college
who... That was an amazing way of describing it.
Yeah, there was this anthropologist in my college who was talking about how in some parts of the world, being gay means that you are the one receiving the cock. So if you're like having anal sex with a guy, if you're penetrating someone, you're straight. As long as you're penetrating whatever it is you're penetrating, whether it's a vagina or a brown vagina, you're still straight. But if you're being penetrated, then you're gay. If you're taking the submissive position, then you're gay.
Wow.
So there's a lot of different cultural. It has a lot to do with the culture, and I think our culture is possibly one of the most sexually repressed cultures out there. we are fucked up, man. We people get so weird about sex in our culture. They're just they get creepy and weird, and they start acting strange. Like, remember that show, Real Sex?
Yeah.
And you see these people, whatever it is that they're into, whatever they're talking about, whenever sex comes up, they get real fucking squirmy and weird. And like, we don't the way we teach it in schools is really fucked up. And you're not. I've got this book that I just bought called, shit, I can't remember, but it's this assemblage of all these articles on sex from the 1800s. And it's like serious articles on masturbation and how to keep your kid from jerking off because it drives you insane, is what they used to say. If you masturbated too many times, it would send you on this downward spiral that would just end in complete insanity. And that was like in the 1800s. That wasn't that long ago. And that's because our, you know, our culture has its roots in the Protestants, who are these who came from England with the idea of worshiping God in a pure environment. And the way that they were thought that you were supposed to worship God was in this bizarre, sexually repressed, whipping yourself in the back, super monogamy. You if you did have sex, it should be really quick. Get it over with fast. Don't enjoy it. Don't enjoy sex. It's evil and bad. And so the whole reproductive cycle got this awful taboo attached to it. And that's what we're the descendants of. So now people are going like running in the opposite direction, you know, and doing crazy shit like, you know, dressing in animal costumes and fucking dolls or whatever. But it's all, I think it's all a result of like awful sexual repression. Because someone who isn't sexually repressed is not going to be able to hate a gay person.
It's amazing the idea that something that happened just, you know, 300, 400 years ago, whatever it was, and the first settlers arrived, that something that happened back then, like that attitude, that beginning of pattern of behavior could manifest itself in now. 2011.
Well,
it's kind of crazy because it's obvious that other things have adopted it along the way. Like corporations, because they found that if you have this Puritan, you know, like, you know, no swearing and no sex, if you have it to, you know, you have that to a certain extent, you can kind of, you know, you make yourself look better. It makes it look nicer and cleaner. And, you know, it's like all having its roots in that original thing.
Well, it's like, yeah, it's all got its roots in that. It's like, if you go to a, I know you've never gone to a strip club, but if you go to, I'm just kidding. If you go to a strip club, the energy in a strip club is always dark. Like it's a dark place.
Yeah.
And it's, you're in there, it's kind of like.
Yeah, hiding.
Hiding in the dark as you watch the naked form.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck? Why is it set up like that? Why is it set up like you're in some dank cave?
So no one can see my boner.
You've got to hide. Yeah, like, why is it like that? It's because we're still sexually repressed. And look at guys at a strip club. Look at the mode that they go into. It's not like guys go there and suddenly they like are feeling free. It's one of my favorite things at a strip club. It's so fucking funny to watch some dudes getting a lap dance because they try to not have any facial expression. Have you ever seen that? What is that where their face freezes like in this bizarre paralyzed coma? They're almost trying to act like they're used to it. Oh, yeah, naked girls are always grinding against me while I drink a Budweiser, and their faces are frozen. It's hilarious. It's like, react to that shit, man. You've got a super hot girl with breast implants rubbing against you. Why are you in an emotional coma right now?
I'll tell you exactly why, because there's other people watching.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to...
What the fuck? The environment is unnatural as humanly possible.
Yeah, right.
You put a guy in a warehouse with a bunch of other guys with folding chairs and girls sitting on people's laps. And, you know, everything else, the bar and all that. I mean, what is it? It's a room. It's a room where people are unnaturally sitting on other people's laps for money.
Yeah.
And you feel like a fucking weirdo, you know?
That's why strip club should be like a back of a 7-Eleven. It should just look like one.
What?
You know, like, it should be like creepy places like that, you know, like private little places, like a van.
Oh, yeah. Well, then, you know, the problem is the girl has to worry about safety. You know, you can't. The whole idea of a strip club is kind of a crazy idea. You know, you're going to go in there, especially if you're actually going to touch the guys. It used to be that they were just allowed to do table dances. But, you know, Eddie Bravo has a great story about the progression of the lap dance, about starting out in a strip club where there was no lap dancing, and then all of a sudden they allow lap dancing, and how everything changed. And one girl was the only girl who was willing to do it the first day. Other girls were like, fuck that, I'm not doing it. But this one girl just made a fuckload of money. And the next day, the rest of them were doing it too. It was like sprinkling here and there. Once you enter into that sort of a situation. I mean, you got a naked girl who's rubbing up against a guy, and it's every instinct is to fuck her, you know? And especially to a lot of these guys, some of these girls are hot as shit, and they would never get this girl in real life. And all of a sudden, this girl's touching them and actually rubbing their cock with her leg and shit like that. I mean, you need that girl to be protected. You know, their girl has to, that everything has to be out in the open, you know. I mean, even a VIP section, there has to be a dude who's like, you know, near the door listening for screams or scuffles, sure. You know. I mean, it's fucking scary shit if you were a chick, man. Can't have a van for that.
When I was 15, the first strip club I ever went to was in New Orleans. And I went to this strip club. In the day.
When you were 15?
In the day. And they let me in. New Orleans is, I don't know if it still is. It's been a long time. But for a 15-year-old, it's an awesome city. They just let you in. They didn't care. And I'm getting this.
Really?
Yeah. And this
they don't check IDs or anything? Or is this a long time ago?
They didn't care. I think they thought it was funny. It was, I don't know. But I got into a strip club. I'm sitting in this chair with the first stripper I'd ever encountered. In fact, I think this is the first naked girl that I'd ever encountered. Like a full, whoa. Yeah. So like I'm sitting in this chair. Before I even saw the girl, I had a raging erection just from being in a strip club. I'm like, oh. And like this girl starts dancing in front of me. And like my heart's like, my heart's pounding. And I'm like holding the side of the chair with my hand. And I just watch my hand reach out and grab her ass. I couldn't stop it. It was like just an adrenaline rush. I had to touch her. I was so super horny. And she slapped my hand. I was like, you can't touch me. Which I guess at the time I wasn't clear on the rules. But that's what sexual repression does. That's what it does. It's like,
well, that's not sexual repression. That's teasing. You're 15 years old. You could have easily found a girl that's 15 years old and played doctor. That's what a lot of people did. What's weird about your first experience being in a strip club is that a strip club is completely unnatural. I mean, you want to talk about wiring your situation absolutely incorrectly. You're attractive to a girl who you absolutely should not be attractive to. You know, she should not find you attractive in any way, shape, or form, but suddenly she's fucking enamored by you. She wants to spend time alone with you and touch you. Holy shit. Oh, but she wants money. She wants money and you can't touch her back. Well, what is this trap I'm in? Am I going to get to come? No, you can't come. You just sort of sit there while this girl dances around you and every instinct in your body is raging to stick your penis inside of her body. But
sounds
you
like
can't.
Sounds like most relationships, though. Awesome.
I don't like them. I think strip clubs it doesn't. I hate them. I don't like strip clubs, man. I never could get into that.
I get sad. I mean, even when I went to it at the beginning, I would always like try to talk to the girl because I was just like, so what are you doing? And I was always the talker guy.
Yeah.
I just want to talk to you, baby.
Well, I felt bad for all of them. It's like, wow, you can't believe you're doing this.
I never felt bad for them.
Some of them are very nice.
Boring.
Some of them are nice, and they're just stuck, and this is the best way they can make money. I mean, if you look at it about exploiting the system, it's a great way to make a lot of money.
Was Casey Anthony a stripper?
Was she?
I don't know. She seems like it.
I don't know.
I'm so glad I did not follow any of that. I had no idea what anyone
said. I wrote on Twitter that they should have a TV show, a reality show, where it's her and Octomom, and you be the first to find a sober guy to shoot a load inside of you. And it's like a competition. And the name of the show is The Apocalypse. It's just Casey Anthony and Octomom, and see how many straight dudes will shoot loads in them. And they have to get like blood tests before they go in. And
Casey Anthony's Guide to Raising a Child. Ugh. How about that? That's
so. Imagine
it's man. I would take 5,000 Casey Anthonys over one Nancy Grace any day of the week. Nancy Grace is a fucking foul necrophile. I think she is so much more disgusting than some stripper whose kid got into her ecstasy or whatever happened. It's like a dumb girl's kid. She left the kid in the back seat of the car, fell in the kiddie pool because she's negligent or whatever. It's like sad and terrible, but Nancy Grace is like clearly getting off on the whole situation. I hate those tabloid death hags like Grace. There's some other woman I saw too. It was like on The View, and she was like, "We just got the verdict, the Casey Anthony verdict. I'm gonna need your help here. She's innocent." Oh, God, she was innocent. And it was just disgusting. You're weeping because this one mother got off the hook. Meanwhile, every year in Afghanistan and Iraq, the UN is dropping bombs on neighborhoods. Kids are getting blown to smithereens. Kids are getting transformed into hamburger meat on a daily basis in the Middle East because of our fucked up drones that keep accidentally bombing weddings and neighborhoods. And these death hags are freaking out over one dead child. I mean, it's sad. It's very sad that Kaylee Anthony died. I mean, I think that's terribly sad. But when you hear Nancy Grace being like, Kaylee Anthony's bleached bones were found by a cable repair operator, and all that was on her neck was one fabric, one bit of her T-shirt. It's like there's something perverse behind it. Thank you. Sorry about that,
Ryan. Dude, you don't have to. I'm a big fan of bashing Nancy Grace.
What a pig.
There's something gross about whenever I see someone who's angry and they're fat like that, I'm like, maybe you need to go on a diet and you won't be so fucking angry.
Let's get dogged to bounty.
When I see someone with his big jowls and this big, you know, I'm like, exercise, eat right, take some yoga classes. You'll approach this all totally different.
Somewhere the devil is dancing tonight. The tot mom's off the hook.
Tiger Woods. That's another one she went after. She went after Tiger Woods for like.
You guys need to stop watching her so much.
Then. Why? It's brilliant.
I wish I had. I don't have cable. I'd fucking watch her every day.
You guys don't have cable?
No, we don't have cable. Can't do it, man. Turning cable on in your house is like opening a fucking portal to hell with all those advertisements. I love the shows.
But dude, you just DVR everything. Don't be silly.
Yeah, crazy. I've got Apple TV. I've got Netflix. I can watch any show I want to watch. And I know that you can DVR stuff, but inevitably, it's just those commercials, man. They make me depressed. It's every time. Because like, I watch TV at the hotel. When I'm on the road, I watch TV at hotels. And every time I turn on the TV, it seems like things have gotten exponentially stupider. Things have gotten exponentially worse. And I kind of like having those spaces in between watching TV, because I think if you watch TV every day, you don't realize how it's just is imploding into
every itself. Now and then I'll watch something that makes me think like I haven't been paying attention and something's been going on that I'm not aware of, like Two and a Half Men. Like I'll watch Two and a Half Men and, you know, and hear the laugh track and find out that's the number one show in the country.
Yeah.
And I'll start scratching my head. I'll go, okay, what's going on? Did I miss something? Has there been just an invasion of stupid that I wasn't here for? You know, is there something going on?
Right.
You know, I don't. And then you'll watch a commercial and the commercial will be really ridiculous. Like a BP commercial. Have you seen those BP commercials?
No.
We've cleaned up the Gulf and they showed people eating seafood and enjoying it. Like they're sitting there and they're delivering nice shrimps to the table and everything like that. And BP's making it sound like, oh, there's no issues at all anymore.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
It's almost better.
We cleaned up the Gulf and the Gulf is back. The Gulf is back. Like, Jesus fucking Christ. How many people committed suicide because of that thing? Yeah. How many dolphins were killed? How much leakage do you guys still have that's being unreported because people are still finding slicks out there all the time?
And also, you know, a lot of those fishermen, they were doing everything under the table. So it wasn't like they could report their business in a way that they could get the relief funds that BP was giving. Yeah, I mean, it's just like anything else. A lot of those fishermen had businesses that weren't like operating according to code.
How about they were using prisoners to clean up the fucking oil?
And they wouldn't let people film it, and the fumes were making people sick.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're in jail for pot, and they can make you clean up oil.
Did they use that, though? Wasn't it?
Well, they're not using dangerous criminals.
That would be awesome.
Murderers to clean up oil?
Yeah.
Yeah, people bring it back, shanking people with oil.
Yeah.
Bring this back and boil
getting high
it.
Off See, of it.
My uncle told me how to boil oil and turn it into plastic. Make a hard-ass plastic knife.
I'm making oil bomb shank.
Some guy got mad at me. There's a few people. There's been many discussions online. Someone got mad at me for using a black voice, that I shouldn't use a black voice.
Why would he get mad at you?
Talking about like a black man. When I like the way I just said, yeah, I'm going to boil this shit up.
That was a black voice?
That was black, yes.
I thought it was Persian.
You know, I can tell black Holland voices, guys who are black in Holland.
What is it?
It's just their voice. It's an interesting thing how black people have their voices sound slightly different. Like the way, not all of them. Cindy Poitier is a perfect example of someone who doesn't. Or there's, you know, obviously Obama doesn't sound like he's black. But there's a certain, even like really.
Morgan Freeman.
Man, I wonder if you could tell. But it's interesting when you're talking to a guy on the phone. Here's the point. I'm not generalizing here. I'm just being honest about you can tell many, many times whether or not the person you're talking to is black. And it doesn't mean they're not super articulate or super intelligent. It's not. It's a tonal quality. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I think it's the name for that tonal quality is fucking cool. I love the black voice. It's the best, man. I wish I talk like that.
Give me all your money. It sounds cooler.
It sounds so much better than it does. It sounds so much better than our dialect. That dialect is just cool. It's like it's.
What is it? Is it more relaxed?
It's more relaxed. It's got
just cooler.
It's got more. Yeah, just cooler. I don't know how you put it, but like you know when you hear black comedians talk like white people,
right?
That's how they hear us. Like, I think we
Well, that's sort of what they're doing is sort of reiterating what Richard Pryor did. You know, back in the 70s.
I got to piss, man. I'm sorry.
Go rock that pee-pee, son.
Coconut water is insane.
And that full Synergy. You drank that full kombucha. We got him and coffee. We're filling Dunkin' up with liquids. We know that they're crucial to mind functioning.
Cleaning out his UTI.
So tell me your story about your friend's little brother.
Oh, yeah. So this is pretty interesting. My friend's little brother, he's 21, so he's a little bit older, but real nice guy, plays video games, has autism, but he's got it where he can actually live and he can drive a car and stuff like that. But he's very, very shy, very quiet, very like when he's out in public. The first time I met him, he would like wear his sunglasses for a couple of minutes and take them off and put them back on. Like he was just very uncomfortable. Didn't really ever make conversation. It was always like answers like to questions, you know, like, so, hey, how you doing today? Good, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
So we were hanging out recently and he drinks here and there and he'll drink like vodka straight and he'll just chug it real quick because in the past he would drink vodka and he felt more comfortable, like relaxed, like he's not so intense and stuff. So last night or a couple nights ago, I was like, hey, so have you ever smoked weed? And he goes, I was really against it, but then I saw that movie documentary with Joe Rogan in it, and now I'm thinking different about it. And I'm like, oh, you're talking about the drug war movie or whatever.
The union.
Yeah. Because he just watches Netflix all day. That's all he does. He doesn't work. He just pretty much, because it's really hard for him to work. So he just, you know, lives with his mom and stuff. And I'm like, well, if I got some, would you want to try it? And he goes, yeah, I think I would. So we went to the store and We got they didn't have any joints left. So they had these pre-rolled blunts, you know, like these humongous cones.
Right, right, right.
And it looks like a cone, but, you know, like an oil cone. And it's filled with weed. And so I got him I didn't know what to get him. Like, I didn't think of, like, sativa would be. So I got him a hybrid. And I told him to take a couple hits. I told him to take one hit. I taught him how to inhale and stuff like that. And he took one hit, you know, and I was like, all right, maybe one more, and we'll just sit here and watch some TV for a while and see how it goes. And it went well, and he was kind of like smiling, started giggling a little. And he goes, you know, like 10 minutes later, he goes, can I have some more? And I'm like, yeah, sure, and gave him some more. This time he took like 5 humongous hits, strong hits and shit like that. Next thing you know, he was giggling and laughing and talking, and he was making sentences, and it was the most amazing thing that I ever saw. Like, it was amazing.
Well, there was a story on the news from Northern California about a family who had a son with autism, and they tried everything with this kid. They just could not get him to come out of his shell. They tried therapy. They tried, you know, all these different methods to try to get him to communicate. And then they started giving him weed, and they started feeding him hash. He would eat the hash, and he'd put it in fruit, and he would eat it. And the kid became a normal kid.
Yeah. Wow.
It's like it all just went away. Like, he figured out how to tune in.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It's fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Anybody who says there's no medical use for marijuana, you're a goddamn anti-human. You know, you're a fucking criminal. You're a criminal. You run around saying that these people that can't actually benefit from it. I don't think what we do with marijuana, when I talk about how I'm on the medical marijuana program, like, as a, you know, and people like go, oh, you're scamming the system. Maybe no. Maybe no. Maybe no. Maybe it is medicine, just like aspirin's medicine. You know, isn't it? I mean, when you're having a cold and you take cough medicine and it makes you go to sleep and feel better, isn't that medicine? Well, guess what? That medicine isn't fucking fixing anything. That medicine is just curing your symptoms a little bit or concealing your symptoms to allow you to get a good night's sleep. Well, marijuana is actually making you feel better. That is medicine. It's medicine for everybody, man. You know, it's something that makes you more connected and more sensitive and more relaxed.
Well, I just stopped smoking pot for a month because I was smoking it every day, all day. And this is what happened to me. the next day after having probably for a year constantly smoked pot, the next day, you know what happened to me?
What?
Nothing. After I stopped.
Listen, Dr. Drew says that the marijuana today is much stronger than the marijuana.
No reaction, no withdrawals.
Dr. Drew says there's serious withdrawal symptoms.
No anxiety attack. You know what happened the next day? Nothing. You know what happened the next day? When I saw flowers, I wasn't thinking, oh, these are expansions of the mind of God. I was just seeing flowers. And then that's it. Great. Thanks. That's great. It really helped. And I've done it for, actually today was the first time I smoked pot.
Are you suggesting that Dr. Drew is a lying whore?
I am suggesting that.
I am as well.
Yeah, I think him and Nancy Grace are gonna burn in a specific part of whatever hell there may be. If
a special baby that gets eaten by Florida. Florida will turn into a mouth and eat that baby. The swamps will open up and you'll see teeth come out of the ground. They'll snatch up the child.
Man, I would love to take
dead babies Florida.
You know what would be so fun? This is a weird thought that I've had. But
wait a minute, you?
I know.
Get out.
But if you know, Nancy Grace is a full-grown thing, is disgusting and foul.
Right.
But if you could shrink Nancy Grace down and have like a pocket Nancy Grace that lived in a little aquarium, that would be the best ever. Some little judgmental death kind that you had in an aquarium that was just always upset and doing a little show.
Do the right thing.
Do the right thing.
Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Told those girls that he loved them. We'll go to the next caller. Is it a dead baby in Florida? It is.
The semen stains on the mattress. Can always we zoom in on these semen stains? Let's get Dog the Bounty Hunter in here to just talk about these semen
scratching
stains.
Your clit going fucking semen,
semen
blood
stains,
semen.
Semen stains, semen stains. That's her mantra. When she walks, she chants semen stains.
Do you know
semen
Nancy Grace
stains.
Holds the world record for the longest squirt ever by a female vagina? Did you know that? She's got the record.
Yeah, what, when
she
was
she can squirt like 18 feet.
Yeah, I think that squirt that's happened. Hilarious. Didn't that squirt happen when she saw JonBenet Ramsey's death picture?
What the fuck, dude? We were at a club in Pittsburgh, and we went to see. I went with Mark Delagrante and Mike Goldberg. Went to see Belladonna. Belladonna had like a little show. We didn't go to see her in specifically, yeah. But she just so coincidentally happened to be performing there.
Sure.
And they were telling us that we had a girl last week could squirt all the way from one table to another table.
Wow.
This girl could squirt 9 feet. Apparently, she would finger blast herself, and whatever that female ejaculate is, it would literally launch itself through the sky like 9 feet.
Now, that female ejaculate, isn't there some controversy about that? Like,
it's a mixture of urine and cum or whatever. And secretions, supposedly.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of urine. I don't know. What do I know? But it just seems crazy that someone could just shoot that shit 9 feet.
I mean, that's even. I mean, even shooting urine 9 feet is no small feat. That's a.
Yeah, apparently the longest distance some guy shot a load like 18 feet or something crazy like that. That's like the world record. But that might be a lie too. He might have had a fan behind him.
Yeah, I want to see video of it.
They didn't tell you that he shot that load in an air tunnel where they used to test cars for their aerodynamic capabilities. Boom. 18 feet, Bob.
World record.
It doesn't specify whether or not there's a tailwind.
Yeah, it's squirting is a fascinating phenomenon.
Joey Diaz used to date a girl who had that issue. And he goes, it's inconsistent. That's what you get mad about. One day it's like lemon meringue pie. The next day it's like gunpowder. It's inconsistent.
Gunpowder.
I had a girl that was a gusher, but she never really squirted. But after sex, it was seriously like a bucket in your
bed.
Yeah,
my girl in high school was like that. When I had a girlfriend in high school who would drip down her legs. It was crazy. Yeah. Like we would just be hanging out in her bed and just kissing her. And all of a sudden, like her legs would be wet. It would drip down her pussy,
wow.
Down the inside of her thighs. Dirty bitch.
Now, when that happens, they have to drink more water because that's from, you mean, they do, right? Because, like,
no more than you do if you have to take a leak, you know? I mean, if you have to take a leak, do you have to immediately get water in your system or you die?
No, they get dehydrated.
Yeah, from they get dehydrated juice? Faster.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, it has to.
Yeah, I bet squirters can die of thirst. If they squirt.
Yeah, maybe that's one of the tests they take you if you're going to go on a fucking engine, on a hike in the Mojave. Yeah, don't is anybody squirt. Here a squirter? Is it imperative that you do not masturbate during this journey? Are we clear? What? Not at all? You're going to need to conserve your water, girls.
Do not squirt in the desert.
You need to keep your pussy dry and keep your mind clean. Keep your mind clean of impure thoughts. Any girls leak out of their panties.
If you were in the desert with a squirter, could you drink the squirt?
Sure. Yeah. Guys have lived on boats for days and not dehydrated because they drank their own piss. Not dehydrated to death. Of course, they had some dehydration. But you can drink your own urine. You can recycle your own urine, like apparently over and over again.
Yeah, that I knew that, but it
keeps you alive. There's people that have done it when other people wouldn't do it, and those people that wouldn't do it they died.
Well, that's an idiot.
Yeah,
it's like I'd rather die than drink something that was already in my body. What a moron.
Yeah, well, think about the dude who wanted to get his head cut off. It takes every kind of people to make this crazy world.
That's right.
It takes sing Brian. Takes every kind of people.
I don't know the songs that I just sing.
You're a couple years younger than me, son. You missed out on some great references. This temple in India, man. Let's talk about that because it's fucking fascinating. And Duncan, you are a man who, all the people I know, you know more about ancient India and the Bhagavad Gita and the all the different ancient texts.
Sure.
And,
maybe. I don't know. I don't know that much, though.
First of all, try and pronounce this fucking name. This is the place in India. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
They'll throw some fucking words into a name. They don't give a fuck. They'll throw some letters, rather, into a name in India. I mean, they're really not trying to be brief at all.
No, they're not.
This is the real name of this place where they found this. What it is a giant temple. And under this temple, they found a vault that hadn't been opened for over 150 years. Actually, 6 vaults that hadn't been opened, some of them, for 150 years. And there's at least $20 billion worth of treasure in there. And now they're saying that it's probably going to be closer to $1 trillion.
Wow.
Because what they're counting on is how much these things are actually worth, you know, as far as like the gold and, you know, the emeralds and all the jewels and stuff. But they're saying, well, just the you know, if you wanted to auction this stuff off, you know, what the real worth would be much higher than that. You know, you're looking at something as just the, you know, what it's worth mineral wise, you know, but, you know, just the historical value of these things would bring it through the roof. This is the name of the place. This is fucking crazy. Thiruvananthapuram, India. Say that. Thiruvananthapuram. 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 Can you read this? Come over here and read this.
I can't read. I don't read Sanskrit. I'd stumble over.
No, it's not Sanskrit. It's English.
I can't read.
Do you know what that would say? Well, you're pretty good at this shit. What would that say? That's the place where it happened in India.
Thiruvananthapuram.
It's like Bert Kreischer's Twitter name.
Thiruvananthapuram.
Remember, imagine if you were fucking landed on a plane flight in India and you had to get to Thiruvananthapuram and you only saw it written down and you're trying to talk to the driver.
Thiruvananthapuram? Can you take me to Thiruvananthapuram?
Thiruvananthapuram, please.
Will you copy that and put .com and see if somebody actually has that domain name?
They must, right?
I want through Rampatan.
But that's that the thing about that, finding all that treasure under that temple, it goes, I'm reading this awesome book about, you know, how religion is designed to take people's money. And I think that's a really good example of that.
This temple having so much money.
Yeah, because people get this book that I'm reading, and it's so funny that I can't believe I hadn't considered this, but it talks about how in the Old Testament, you know, they say God asks for an offering of a lamb or a burnt offering of an unblemished cow. And all those things are just priests saying what they want to eat. Mm-hmm. It's like, obviously, God doesn't want a cow. Yeah. God doesn't want a burnt offering of a sheep. God doesn't want $20 billion worth of jewels. It's the priests saying God wants these things and people bring it to the priests. That's what it is.
Yeah. They had sacks filled with diamonds piled next to tons of gold coins and jewelry. Apparently, it's fucking incredible. The vaults of the 18th or the 16th century Sri Padmanabhaswamy, temple, the royal chapter of the former rulers of this area of Kerala State. Wow.
But it's kind of weird to think that you have all these vaults under your temple and you never open them up.
Yeah, I mean, how the fuck did people just die and not tell people about the shit?
Don't you go under your temple ever?
Well, now the issue is, now that people know, this is just a little temple in a small town, and now they have, like, a few cops there that are guarding it. But guess what, fuckface? That's not enough. You dummies just went on NBC.com and talked about something that might be worth trillions of fucking dollars.
Yeah.
Not you know, not millions, not billions.
Yeah,
there's
trillions.
People that think it could be worth, you know, it may be worth $1 trillion.
You know what? I have a feeling the United States is going to find some oppressed people over there who need freeing.
They found 15-foot-long gold chains.
Damn.
Wow.
15-foot-long gold chains. Holy shit, man.
It's just, like, man, when I was a kid, if there was any kind of, like, hidden tunnel anywhere, like, I'd go into a sewer. When I was, it's like, how has no one gone down into that vault for so long?
There's a 4-foot-tall solid gold statue studded with emeralds.
We used to have this sewage system that went through our whole neighborhood that we used to call Candyland as a kid.
Yeah.
And we would, like, go... It was like a drainage sewage thing.
Why the fuck did you call it Candyland?
Because, well, one thing is somebody spray-painted the entrance so it looked like you're walking into, like, Alice in Wonderland or Candyland or something like that. And you walk through it. And I mean, somebody dragged a couch in there somehow. And people would sit in there and hang. It was like underground. So we'd go through these streets in the sewage system and pop out these little sewage pipe things. And it was kind of like we had like this underground tunnel throughout the whole neighborhood.
Yeah.
It was pretty badass until it rained, and then it was just disgusting because it was
shit and poop.
Well, it was all rainwater and stuff like that, but it still had gross.
Isn't it incredible in 2011 that they're finding this in this temple? It makes you wonder what the fuck they found in Egypt. You know, what kind of cool shit was pillaged many, many years ago? Because, you know, by the time Western explorers started, you know, tapping into those temples in the 1800s, so much of that stuff was already gone. Thousands of years of grave robbers.
Right.
People got into temples and stole things. You know, it's one of the more impressive things about when they found, like, Tutankhamun's is that they actually discovered it and nobody had gotten to it yet. And they were able to do it, you know, within, you know, this generation and open this up and expose it to everybody. You know, I wonder how many of those things are still out there.
A ton.
Just imagine.
A ton.
Imagine if they got to one and it was like that fucking scene in Alien. You know, remember seeing an Alien, the first movie where they found the one giant alien with his chest exploded?
It's the best scene ever.
Oh, it's the best. When they're looking at this dead alien trying to figure out what the fuck killed him. How dope would that be if we got into some underground temple and there was the bones of some fucking dead alien.
Dead alien.
On like a spaceship throne like
an Quetzalcoatl. A dead Anunnaki. I just went to the Metropolitan Museum in New York, and they had this ancient Sumerian temple that they've rebuilt there.
Wow.
It is fucking awesome, man. It's so cool. And, like, the woman the museum was telling us that all of it was just stolen. Like, all that stuff was stolen from, like, Iran, I guess. Or, like, I guess that stuff came from Iraq, but... Like, it was really amazing.
If you're going to say Iran, you have to say Iraq.
Really?
Yeah. Iraq. Yeah.
I get confused about
Iraq.
Everything I pronounce, when I'm about to pronounce anything, it goes through this weird filter. I'm like, Iran, Iraq.
I always say Iran. I always say Iran because that's how I heard it.
I don't
when
know
Jimmy
how to
Carter
say it.
Was on TV.
I don't
And they had this. I don't. I'm just kidding you. But I'm just saying that people always give me a hard time about it.
No, it's it's the worst. Like, I have no, I don't know. That place.
You should not hang out with those people, by the way.
Don't say Chile. It's not people I know in real life. It's message board people. Chile. You're not supposed to say Chile.
Chile.
No, Chile.
Chile. Chile.
Chile.
Chilean sea bass is delicious.
It's delicious. Mm. I had some last night. It's very yummy. I cooked
it
myself.
It's so good.
So good. It's supposed to be endangered, though, or something. You're not supposed to eat it.
I see why. It's delicious.
It is. That's the reason why it's endangered.
Yeah, but this stuff was really cool to see, man. They have, like, the way they wrote is they have these, you know, about the little rollers with the...
Yeah, cuneiform.
Yeah, that's what that's called.
Yeah.
And they roll it into clay, and it's really fucking
it's amazing.
Cool, man.
Yeah, I went to Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. I believe it's Museum of Fine Arts, whatever the museum is. There's one museum that has an ancient Mesopotamian collection, ancient Egyptian, ancient Iraq,
Iraq,
Iran, all that area shit. but they have a lot of that cuneiform script. It's really cool to think that, you know, you're sitting here in this air-conditioned room staring at some piece of clay that someone had written on 6,000 years ago, yeah. maybe, you know? And that's how they wrote. They wrote in these little up and down little squiggles,
yeah.
you know, little lines, rather. They look like, you know what they look like? They look like old nails. If you go to an old house, like when I used to do construction in Boston, Boston is so fucking old that a lot of times you would get houses and you would do demos on these houses, like, you know, have to tear down a wall or something like that, and you would have to pull nails out, and they would be these fucking ancient nails where it wasn't like made by a machine, where there was like a round flat top and then a tubular, you know, pointy part on the bottom, you know, that's like, you know, straight. And no, it wasn't like that. It was like they were these weird, like almost handmade fucking nail looking things. They were like cast into yeah. some
iron, yeah. cast iron, like pegs. Yeah.
They're like old ass fucking, but that's what, nails. That's what this cuneiform looks like. It looks like all these old nails, you know, like next to each other and sideways and shit.
Yeah, it's crazy to see that and to see how beautiful those statues are and how perfectly sculpted yeah. they are, and to think about how old that civilization was, and that somehow we think of them as primitive.
Yeah.
You know, we judge the anything that old, we just think of it as, oh, they were crazy. They're not crazy, but, you know, they had these myths where they believed in these winged, like, bird-headed creatures that they worshipped, and it was some kind of hallucination that they were all having.
Well, there's so much controversy about that whole part of the world and that time of the world because of Zechariah Sitchin. And so many of those guys who study that Sumerian text don't agree with him. So it's real hard to figure out who's right and who's wrong. You know, there's like a whole website called SitchinIsWrong.com, and it all breaks down right. all the stuff about the Anunnaki and all the shit that Sitchin said. Sitchin looked at all those pictures of these giant people from, you know, these clay yeah. reliefs, and looked at all the Sumerian texts, and his deduction after all these years of studying it was that there was some great planet, you know, 3,600 year elliptical orbit that comes between us and Jupiter,
yeah.
or Mars and Jupiter every 3,600 years, and they come over to Earth and then they fucking deal with us every 3,600 years. And this was like, you know, this, everybody else thought that this was the most ridiculous, outlandish science fiction, ridiculous depiction, but the bottom line is, if you look at all those clay tablets, there's so much weird shit to them. There's, why are these people so big? And then there's small people that they're holding in their hands. And some of these small people have monkey tails. And why, you know, they have the actual solar system of our solar system, like a drawing of it with yeah. the planets in the correct order and the correct size, including Pluto.
Yeah.
You know, people dispute that, man. But look, I've seen the images, and I've seen people, you know, compare the images to the actual orbits of Earth, and for an artist's depiction, it's pretty goddamn close. You know, whether it's absolutely accurate or not, just looking at it and saying, how the fuck did they even know about any of this shit? How did they know that there were all these planets out there? How could they distinguish between the stars and those planets? How were they doing that 6,000 years ago? Because I know you and I can't. You know, we wouldn't be able to do it. If you don't have a telescope, how the fuck are you seeing all that shit? If, what is it, just dumb luck that they had this depiction of the right. sun, clearly the sun, a circle with even like the little flame marks around it, and then they had all these depictions of all these planets, and obviously in orbit around the sun.
Sure.
And big and small that directly represent what is actually out there. Here's Jupiter. Look how big it is. Here's Mars. It's smaller than us. I mean, it was all there. It's as far as an artist depiction, it's an artist depiction of someone who knows what's out there. And to think that they knew what's out there 6,000 years ago is pretty trippy.
I don't understand. I have never had a problem believing that aliens came by here at one point and had a little conversation with our DNA. And I don't know why people have a problem believing that. It seems just so clear. Every single religion talks about something coming down from the sky. I mean, where? Find me a religion that talks about an earth-based deity, something that comes up out of the ground, something that comes out of the ground. It's the you know, the Greek gods, they lived on Mount Olympus. The great spirit and the different visitors that the Native Americans talk about, they came from space They came. We got visited.
It's all because they're on mushrooms, Duncan.
It could be that, or it could be. What is it possible that what's going on is that these people are all survivors of a civilization that crashed because of some sort of a natural catastrophe back when the world wasn't as connected as it is today. Like, say, what's going on in Japan right now? What's going on in Japan is this crazy, terrible situation. The tsunamis. Take away the nuclear power thing because obviously we're talking about at a time where there was no nuclear power.
Yeah.
So everything gets crushed and falls apart, and that part of the world gets destroyed. Well, what if the rest of the world, like, they had to rebuild, but the rest of the world survived independently, and then people came over in helicopters and shit, and these people were still living like people lived, you know, 10,000 years ago because of their collapse and their civilization is destroyed by natural catastrophe. Maybe they see people landing in jets and in airplanes and shit, and they think, holy shit, these are aliens.
Right.
Is that possible?
Yes. Yeah, it's possible. It's one of those things where we can never answer it, but...
Yeah, that is the problem, right?
That's the big problem, but...
My theory sucks, though. My theory's not fun. It's not fun and or sexy. Helicopters landed, and those are the UFOs. That's gay.
I just think there was a...
Why?
Here's what happened.
G-H-E-Y.
I'll tell you what happened, and I do know.
You do?
Yeah. We came from Mars. Mars got attacked by aliens, and we had to escape from Mars to come here. And we landed, and there were some ecological disasters that made us forget all the technology that we learned. That technology got all fragmented up and turned into, like, religions and magical systems, and the Kabbalah and all that stuff is just based on, like, very ancient metaphysical circuit boards. We're the descendants of these survivors from another planet. We, you know, have some vague race memory of something bigger, and we try to translate it in the form of all of our religions, and we all squabble and fight over it, and the squabbling and the fighting is keeping us from reassembling the spaceship that we were building in the beginning. And if we could just get back to work on that goddamn spaceship, then
we can't get back to Mars, though, dude. Mars doesn't exist anymore. Mars died off.
Joe.
What this is?
It's inside Mars.
Is like Lost. It's like our show Lost, yeah. Except we are, you know, 100,000 generations of people living on this island, and we've completely forgotten that it's an island.
That's it. That's what it is.
From Mars.
That's it. You got to get back to Mars. But inside Mars... It's inside Mars. That's where it is. There's all this. Haven't you seen those pictures of those giant holes in the side of Mars?
No.
It's in the volcanoes, Duncan.
There's volcanoes on Mars?
Yes.
New information.
It's invisible.
Call Richard Hoagland. Richard Hoagland will connect. There. Look, this rock connects exactly 15 meters from that rock, which goes over to here, which is this multi-sided pyramid. Like, whoa, 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 whoa. Multi-sided what? And you got to look at it sideways and squint and... What are you seeing that I'm not seeing?
Pixelation.
Those guys are crazy.
We will never know. It's a big mystery. That's the fun of it.
The idea, though, is the Nubians believe that. The Nubians believe they came from Mars. That was the ancient Nubian folklore. Is that something happened?
Were the Nubians
part of Africa?
Yeah, that is what happened. We got attacked by the fucking Zerg.
Or we got hit by a meteor, man. Maybe we were super. Maybe that was the real ancient civilization, that we got attacked by asteroids, you know, that we lived on Mars and Mars got hammered by asteroids. Yeah. We lost our environment. And so we just took a spaceship and flew here, you know, 20,000 years ago and mingled with apes.
And then
we forgot about everything. We forgot about our spaceship.
We forgot how we got
here.
Yep. That's what I think it is. Now you've got these weirdos parading around as the priests of religion.
How long would it take? Imagine this. Imagine if you have a spaceship and the spaceship can carry 4,000 people.
Sure.
And take these 4,000 people from Earth, and because of some shifting of the solar system, the balance, all of a sudden Earth becomes uninhabitable, but Mercury is, or, you know, Venus is, or there's another planet that
Let's just say we go back to Mars.
We terraform Mars.
Yeah.
Let's say we terraform Mars, and they've done it successfully to the point where they show you, like, Mars is inhabitable, and you saw people fishing on Mars and having a good time and vacationing and tailgating and shit, and 4,000 people get on a ship to avoid Earth's disaster, and they land on Mars. How long would it take? How many generations before we completely forgot what happened? Because it's like 4,000 generations or 4,000 people, right? If you get 4,000 people, you'd have to get scientists and educators and philosophers. You would have to, like, mix it up really carefully because you would want as much of our civilization to carry on as possible. But how many generations would it take before we completely forgot what happened?
Well, you maybe like you know, it depends on the how we're storing our information. Mm. That's the what are we storing our information on? And
well, these things, man, you know, if you're doing it on little SD cards, you're doing it on these little SD cards, right?
Yeah.
You fucking can lose these, dude.
Sure.
You, shit can go wrong. Look how tiny that is. What if you have this and then, you know, we have to start from scratch or some sort of Mad Max situation and you have to invent some new way to read these things? If you and I had all the time in the world to come up with a way to read this, we would never solve it.
So what you would do after the information devices start getting wiped out, something happens where the information devices get wiped out. So then you're going to start, I suppose, trying to encode the information on things that will last, you know, and that's where
like
you...
what?
Stone.
That's why those Georgia Guidestones.
Yeah, right. That kind of stuff.
Could you imagine if you just said, when you said encode, I thought of it for a second. I said, wow, encode is an interesting way of putting it. Can you imagine if it's actually encoded in DNA? You know, we know that we can embed things. We can embed, you know, I mean, if a human being or an animal or anything is really just a information, chemicals, you know, all these different materials that are interacting with each other. If we can introduce something into that system, whether it's in a biological system or a plant, or something where you can actually encode information into its genetics, where you could pull that information out almost as if it's like a USB
ones
clip.
And zeros.
Yeah, ones and zeros. Yeah. You can inject information like maybe that's what the Fibonacci code is. Maybe the Fibonacci code, the golden ratio, the you know, the universal golden ratio. Maybe what things like of those nature, you know, like things like what makes a sunflower seed so beautiful, and it's this exponential sort of mathematics that's involved in it all. Maybe that really is like the code of the universe, encoded into everything in nature.
Maybe that's a signature of the designer. That's a signature of whatever software designer came up with this virtual universe. That's how he signs everything, or it signs everything, with like some kind of like ratio. That's how you know who made this stuff.
That's his shit.
His signature.
This is his dimension.
Yeah, this is his dimension. I sign everything with a Fibonacci sequence.
Did you imagine that if maybe there's an infinite number of universes?
You guys smoke too much weed.
Well, we sure have. We sure have. There's no doubt about that. But could you imagine if there is the possibility, we were talking earlier about this guy Wiener getting busted for pulling his dick out, and how weird it seems that as time goes on, things seem more and more like a movie, like this Michelle Bachmann character or any so many things that are going on, the hypocrisy of this great world, you know, the fall of the free market system, the interjection of tax dollars into it, and the fucking the scandal that's erupted left and right over every single aspect of it. It starts to look more and more like a movie. Well, could you imagine if, as time goes on, the things that you can do right now with Second Life and the things that you can do right now with some sort of a simulator game online are pretty goddamn spectacular. But nothing compared to what they're going to be able to accomplish 1,000, 100,000, 1,000,000 years from now.
Right.
1,000,000 years from now, there could be architects of their own universe, and there could be built-in humor built into these universes that as the game gets closer and closer to being over, it becomes more and more ridiculous.
Yeah.
To the point where it forces you to recognize that, oh my God, this is all fake.
Yeah.
This is all the figment of someone's imagination and computer programming.
Well, or how about this? Instead of saying it's fake, how about it's just a form of university getting you ready for something, and as you get closer and closer to graduation, things become more and more absurd. And waiting at the end of this thing is this hilarious surprise party with all your friends who like put you under so that you could experience this thing.
You had a really interesting point once, a theory, an idea that you had about the universe being your own life, and that as you get closer and closer to your mortal death, more and more catastrophes start to take place in the world. Though the news is constantly filled with, you know, just carnage and horrible things. And what this really is your own mortality slowly slipping away.
And I think that's one. I always think about that, like when the simulator fades out and you blink back into your true existence. I think it's this weird sense of like, oh wait, you mean that if I just focused, I could have turned the entire planet into a paradise? And they're like, yeah, that was totally one of the things you could have done. If you wanted to, and you'd focused, and you'd like, you'd used the strength that was inside of you, and you'd managed to project all of your positivity out into the world, you could have transformed this particular planet into a new Garden of Eden. But you decided to write some jokes, which is cool. Hey, next time. We'll do it next time. Maybe it'll work next time.
doing more than writing jokes. Just doing this podcast, having this these conversations, you know, putting this kind of information out like the way we do it every week. I think we're letting people in on a different way of thinking, and people get invested in it and they get involved in it, and it helps their fucking life, man. I get messages from people all day about it. And when I do the podcast, or I do comedy shows rather, and people come up to me over and over again, they tell me how much they love the conversations and about how much they love the opportunity to kind of relook at life, to look at life through a different lens. You're not just by doing this podcast, you're not just writing jokes. You're allowing people to look at a possible other path and to be inspired by a group of people that are like their friends that are in their ear. Like all you people listening right now, we are like your online friend. We are.
Right.
We're in your ear right now, and we're going to continue to do this, and we'll be a part of your life, and it'll enhance your life, you know, and it'll help. So you're doing more than that, dude.
Well, and also there's the awesome thing is there is a reciprocity, because I keep getting these like awesome posts from people who hear stuff I say, and they're like, oh, well, this is what you were talking about. Like I've been thinking about this thing, talking about this thing with Natasha called interpersonal environmentalism, which is this idea that true environmentalism is not going out into the world, way out in the world to try to make it better, but it's like dealing with what's happening with you and your closest circle of friends and what's happening in your ecosystem to try to clean that up first. And I had this idea of how if a large enough group of people, if a collective of consumers got together, then they could shut down any corporation they wanted to if it reached a big enough number of people that could instantaneously do boycotts and stuff. And someone Facebooked me this thing about something called collective consumerism, and this guy did this weird experiment, and it's some group called Carrot Mob, I think. And the YouTube video he made was kind of cheesy, but the experiment itself was badass, which is he wanted to see what would happen if he could organize people on a local level. And he went to all these different liquor stores and he said, hey, if I get a giant group of people to come in here and buy a shitload of stuff, will you donate 20% of the proceeds to turning your liquor store into a more eco-friendly liquor store with better lights, better whatever, wiring so that you don't burn as much energy and it's better for the environment? So like he went to all these liquor stores, and one liquor store said, we'll give 20% of whatever you make us from this mob you're talking about to making it more eco-friendly. So they ended up getting at this little liquor store, they ended up getting a giant fucking around the block line of people waiting in line to buy shit from this liquor store as a form of activism. The place made in 3 hours $10,000 and ended up donating like, you know, a big percentage of that. And now it's an eco-friendly liquor store. And this is all because of one guy. This is all because one guy came up with this experiment. What happens if we organize consumers? Because his theory
is... That's a great idea too, because he's not asking them to do anything with that money that's bad for the business. It's only going to help their business.
That was his logic.
That's brilliant.
Because corporations just want to make money.
Yeah.
So if you could organize people at a big enough level, and you go to corporations and say, hey, we're going to swarm you and buy a shitload of stuff from you on this day on the condition that you make these changes in your corporation. That's the theory behind it. It's pretty cool.
That's a brilliant idea. And you picked this up on Twitter? Someone Twittered this to you?
Someone popped it on my Facebook page. And it's like, that helps me a lot in like, you know, philosophies that I'm developing and things I'm thinking about right now, which is, that is the cool thing, man.
Every day I get Twitter messages, Facebook messages. I get messages from people who are interesting. They send me interesting links. You create sort of a like-minded group of humans, you know, and that's something that you're a part of, man. You know, and when we're talking about the possibility of like making the world a better place, you can make your world a better place, and you are. You know, and we're all making our world a better place. You know, we're all, by being cool to our friends, by surrounding ourselves with positive and interesting, creative, inspiring people, you make your world better by, you know, having good times all the time, because you're always around people where you enjoy each other's company and you feel energized by each other. And by doing that and creating your own immediate small world, and then by doing what we're doing and then broadcasting this ideal and showing your success with this and showing, you know, inspiring people with this thing. Like, this is not something that requires money. This requires focus and intelligence, honesty and objectivity, but it just requires your energy. It requires you to do it. And we can all do it. We can all surround ourselves with people that are cool and be cool to the people that are around us all the time. And don't take anything less. Some people need religion for that. And that's one of the things that religion does a good job of programming people to be a good Christian. If you're a true Christian, you follow true Christianity, which most people who call themselves a Christian sadly don't. You know, most people who are crying out for fucking death to Osama bin Laden.
God hates fags.
And I'm a Christian. We don't tolerate that. They're not really listening to the actual words, you know, that are in the Bible. But to be a good Christian is to subscribe to an ideology that is going and moving your life in the direction of the positive at all times, to look out for your neighbors, to be a good person. All those things, these are guidelines to live a happy, productive life, to put yourself in the right frequency, like you were talking about in terms of your own personal depression, that you weren't in the right frequency, you weren't in the right state of mind because of nutrition, because of health, because of your own way of looking at the life.
Yeah, and you can...
Get it together, bitches.
Yeah, get it together, because this is the thing, man. I really believe that if enough people organize using the internet, this rudimentary nervous system that's springing up around a planet, if enough people really start using it in the right way, like this guy did in a very micro level with this carrot mob idea, if people start using it in the right way, I think you could turn this fucked up simulator into some kind of amazing new world.
You could. And you know what? People complain sometimes that this issue gets brought up more than once on the podcast, but I'll give you a reason for that. You know, and there's a quote that someone read, I don't know who it was that wrote it, but someone had it on their Twitter recently. It's a genius quote that I've heard for years, but I always forget. Inspiration is like bathing. It's effective, but only for a short period of time. That's why we recommend it every day.
Wow, that's cool, yeah.
And inspiration, you know, in this form of reiterating things that you and I already believe in and already know. If we were just sitting here having this conversation alone, even if there wasn't a microphone, even though this is some shit that we have talked about maybe 50 fucking times in the past, we would still be talking about it again.
Yeah.
Because it's important to keep ourselves on this frequency.
Yeah, and it's the main... I mean, also, yes, exactly. You got to stay on this frequency, and it's what's more exciting than continually reminding yourself that you are part of, you know, what some people call the apocalypse or the singularity, and you're part of that. You're hopefully part of what's helping, you know, human beings evolve to a place that's better. That's and I don't mean me or you as individuals. I mean as we represent, you know, that the carrot mob thing. I didn't think of that. That came from someone tuning into what we're doing, and then we're tuning into what they're doing, and it's the beginning of some big idea. That's what it is. It's the beginning of some amazing idea that's going to come out of all this technology and this kind of dialogue that I think will, you know, I don't know what it'll do. It'll be something amazing.
People can find things that resonate with them and create things that resonate with them, as opposed to looking for something that's already established, that's a part of the mainstream, that's already out there that you can tune into. You know, if you don't have a means of broadcasting to other humans and letting people know, which was the norm for most of the world for, you know, the last fucking X amount of thousands of years up until recently, the best you could do was write a book, and God knows how long it takes for your fucking book to get read by people.
Right.
It takes a long ass time. Nowadays, you could write one fucking true Twitter post and it gets retweeted to a million people.
Yeah.
And that idea is out there, man. You know, one blog entry, one Twitter post to a blog entry that gets retweeted. And that idea becomes out there. You never had the opportunity to organize people before like you can today. So now someone could come up with an idea like this, like getting this group activism thing going on where you just support businesses that are more eco-friendly and encourage them to be more eco-friendly. You never had the opportunity to do that before.
Right.
So now people can do things and find things that resonate with them. Speaking of resonating, this weekend we're at Resonating Like a Motherfucker at the Irvine Improv. Come on down. It's me, Joey Diaz, and we would love to have Ari, or Duncan rather, but Duncan had to go to fucking Seattle.
I'm resonating at the Paris. Parlor Live. I'm going to be resonating at the Parlor Live in Seattle, and I think that's in Bellevue, but you can look up Parlor Live comedy on the internet, and I'm going to be performing there with Natasha Leggero, so you should come
and
back.
I hear that place is the fucking shit. I
really?
Heard it's amazing. Yeah, I keep hearing
awesome
from comics. I keep hearing that it's like the spot to go to. like so many comics I know that have been there and had a great time. Apparently, it also has a billiards hall next to it. It's connected to a pool hall.
Cool.
Which to me is crack. So
you haven't been there yet?
No,
huh?
No, because last time I did Seattle, I did a theater. I did the Moore because I'm kind of big time now.
I guess you are.
But I would do it totally. I would do that Pauler live, man. I keep hearing great things about it, and I know every time I look at the lineup, there's great comics there. But that's you. This weekend, I am at the Irvine Improv. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's this weekend. And aren't we at the Ice House soon, Brian?
I'm at the Ice House Thursday night.
You're at the Ice House 10 this PM. Thursday night?
And I think you were at the Ice House, but I think maybe...
I don't know.
Your schedule's all weird right now.
Ice House Pasadena. No, I'm still there. 22nd and the 23rd. Of July, but this weekend at the Irvine Improv, it is almost sold out. Friday's almost sold out. Saturday's almost sold out. There's some tickets left for Sunday, but they're going to sell out too, probably, especially if we keep talking about it. So that's it for today. We want to thank Duncan Trussell because he's the fucking man, and we always have the coolest conversations, and you always take it to places where, you know, I mean, I've had a million conversations with you, but you're like the psychedelic Joey Diaz.
You always take things to a
place where like, wow, this motherfucker still has stories. Out of all these times of talking, you still have weird, interesting shit to bring up.
Thanks, Joe.
We have the best conversations, man.
I agree.
I love talking to you. And and you're the number one as far as like people asking for get someone back on the podcast. You're number one with a bullet by a long shot.
Well, thanks, you guys. Thank you.
And support Duncan.
Drunken
Trussell. Support my drunkenness.
This should be your new character, Drunken Trussell. That's what you should do. You should do it on stage.
I always used to call him Drunken Trust Me because he always says, trust me.
Drunken Trust Me. And Duncan Trussell's Twitter name, there's... Duncan Trussell. So there's two S's and two L's in Trussell. And you can get Duncan on Twitter, or you can get him at DuncanTrussell.com. But go see him at the Pauler Live with Natasha. She's fucking hilarious as well. It's a great show. And like I said, I heard that place is awesome. It's supposed to be a great club. And that's it. Joe Diaz is with me at Irvine this weekend, and we'll be back. I don't think we're going to be doing one tomorrow. I'm trying to organize something, but... Anthony Bourdain's coming up in the pause course. George Sakalakalos, whatever the fuck his name is, from Ancient Aliens, who's cool as fuck.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, we got Dice Clay in the mix. We're trying to work on getting him.
When is Ancient Aliens?
Ancient Aliens is on it's on the History Channel.
No, when's your show with him?
27th of July.
Badass.
Yeah, I'm so excited. We hung out with him in Vegas. We had a great conversation about aliens, too. We're going to put that on video as soon as Brian gets his lazy ass off his girlfriend's fucking couch and pieces that shit together. Son! Brian, you going to do some time this weekend? Can the fans look forward to seeing a Reichel invasion at the Irvine Improv?
Sure.
Woo! Oh, you enthusiastic bastard. Fucking get this kid on Ritalin. Juice him up with some Starbucks. At the end of the show, he's got nothing left. Look at him. Pick it up. Pick it up. What if we got to do another hour right now?
I haven't gotten to sleep yet today.
I know. That's not what it is. You had a rough night.
He had a rough night. All right. Pot's good for autism. Duncan Trussell's the shit. Those are our messages for today. We'll see you guys soon.
Thank you very much.
We love you. And we love the Fleshlight for sponsoring the Joe Rogan podcast. If you go to fleshlight.com or if you go to joerogan.net and click on the link for the Fleshlight, it'll take you to fleshlight.com, and where you enter in the code name Rogan, you will now receive a massive discount on your new girlfriend. So scratch together those shekels and fire up your hog. Shoot a load in that rubber girlfriend, and we'll see you bitches soon. Love you all. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.